welcome everyone to the Screamcast, episode 72. I am Sean DeRager, and with me is BJ Colangelo.
Hi, I missed you.
We missed you too. And Brad Henderson. You with the fucking yawns, man.
I didn't think you were going to actually say his last name and be like, and Brad. Brad's here.
I should just start saying
it's this. It's like when you say my name and you introduce the show, I automatically yawn. Is that weird?
Just hearing your own name just bores you that much.
Come across as a pretentious ass. But
no, you know. I'm just my own name bores me.
Well, welcome to the show, everybody. We have a great show lined up for you today. Brad and I will be talking to the Arrow folks. Unfortunately, we had to record the interview at a later time, and BJ was not available. But BJ's here now, so
I am here now.
F all that noise.
All that matters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and jump into what's on our doorstep.
Holy cow! I almost forgot.
We'll get the door.
Pizza.
All right, I have a lot of cool stuff on my doorstep.
Sweet.
Nothing new really, but I did my final trip with my VHS lady, and I kind of cleaned house. I picked up Haunting of Julia, Ragdoll, a bunch of just random VHS tapes that I'm really excited about.
Haunting of Julia out of print, like way out of print.
Yep, and that shit is sealed, and it will stay that way. So
I think it's a hard thing. Isn't that hard to find now?
That's what I've been hearing. I mean, I'm just now getting into the kind of like hardcore collector side of it. I'm nowhere near at the level that you are. But I just, what it was is this, you know, this woman, and we don't know if her husband did die or if he's dying. But he had like a mom and pop video store, and she's like, I just need to get rid of it all. So a dollar a piece, just take it, get it the fuck out of here. And
that's a steal.
I was
it's out of tape.
I got,
everything's out of print, but yeah, that's a rare tape.
And I got Punk Vacation on VHS sealed as well.
Wow.
So I'm really excited about that. And I was telling the Vinegar Syndrome boys about it, and they're like, yeah, next time we see it, just bring it. I want to look at it. I was like, okay. Sure. But the two things that I watched, well, I saw two things in theaters. I saw The Gift, which I really liked. And then I saw Tangerine, the Sean Baker film about transgender sex workers shot on an iPhone. It's incredible.
How's it look shot on an iPhone? I was curious
It looks like a movie. Like, if you wouldn't have told me it was shot on an iPhone, I would have no clue.
Cool.
I loved it. I thought it was extremely entertaining, and it's super punk rock filmmaking. Like, I loved it. It was great. But the cool thing is that I revisited with Zach, because he had never seen them, the House of Wax remake and
yes.
Jennifer's Body. We did a double feature. And you know what? Those two get shit on a lot more than they probably should. There's a lot of good in both of those films.
I am a fan, hardcore fan of Jennifer's Body. Well, I mean, it's the name of my wife, so of course I'm a fan of Jennifer's Body.
Well, that's lame. That's lame.
Dad jokes.
What
on,
a
man.
Dad joke. Whoa. I was just rewatching it. I mean, I remember when Jennifer's Body first came out, everybody was complaining about Megan Fox, and I was watching, and I'm like, but Megan Fox isn't even the problem. It's Amanda Seyfried. She just can't carry a film. Megan Fox is doing a bang-up job. Like, whatever. You guys don't know shit. And then House of Wax, I think, would have been a very, very excellent 25-minute movie. Like, had we just... these people just pulled up into the wax town, and then weird shit happened. Like, that's all we really needed. Everything else around it, all the fluff, was just unnecessary. But... yeah, overall,
I fucking love House of Wax. What was that noise?
I'm sure that you do, and I'm not surprised that you do. What?
I said, what was that noise? It sounded like you fell.
No, I'm laying on the couch in sweltering heat, so...
Talk about heat, man. It's like friggin' 108 degrees today.
Yeah, it's like 90-something, and I shot a short film today, which meant windows were closed, air conditioning was off... can't mess with the sound. It was a goddamn sauna. It was terrible.
Oh, you're not going to dub in the effects later? Not going to do some Foley work?
No.
So wait, you're saying that you don't like House of Wax 2005?
No, I do really, I actually really like it. I just think that a lot of it is just kind of fluff. Like, I don't care about, oh, we're going to a football game. Look at this handycam footage. I don't care. I don't care. Just show up, go to the wax place. That shit's interesting. I like that. But all this teenage angst and Paris Hilton wearing a baby blue velour jumpsuit, I don't need that shit. All right,
so check this out. Check this out. What if the House of Wax was actually called Tourist Trap? Because it is more Tourist Trap than it is House of Wax remake.
You are 100% accurate. And I'd still feel the same way about that film. Yeah. I'd be like, I don't need the fluff, just show up. Like,
no,
that's
it's
all
completely
I need.
A Tourist Trap remake. It has nothing to do with fucking House of Wax. Like, just because they're fucking wax, but it is the exact...
It's a tourist attraction.
Yeah. No, I'm saying the Tourist Trap.
No, I understand that, but like that's the only thing that it has in common with House of Wax is that they took the idea of the wax museum
just
turned it into a tourist attraction.
It's amazing because that's personally what I really enjoy about it is, you know, it's definitely more of a Tourist Trap remake than anything with the old fucking House of Wax. I don't know. It's always kind of been a guilty pleasure like that and like Valentine.
I love Valentine. Anybody who talks shit on Valentine's stupid because that movie's awesome.
The remake of Black Christmas. It's the same thing. Like they're like guilty pleasures. They're just weird, obscure things that came out of nowhere. Seemed like they were like music video directed movies that came out around that time, but they actually were decent.
The early 2000s slashers. Everything had kind of that like MTV, like what MTV is now. It had like that kind of feel. Yeah. Where, you know, just loud music, like wall-to-wall sound, like real-world type, you know, teens that were all kind of like a Cracker Jack box of like they're the kids that you see on the cover of like a college promotional video. Like, there's no way that this many diverse people are hanging out in one room together. But every single slasher in the early 2000s did that, and it was awesome, and I love it.
Yeah, I think the downfall to House of Wax was that they really promoted that See Paris Die thing when it was coming out, and like it was all about Paris Hilton. And, like they were just milking that, trying to get money. But I think that ruined a lot of. I think that turned a lot of people off. But deep down there, it's actually a pretty decent movie.
I understand what you're saying
because I'm a huge fan of the remake of The Hitcher, but they put a lot of fluff in there too. Where I was like, oh, come on, like this is such a good movie, like we could do without you know some of this shit that's happening.
Yeah,
but no,
they got a stretch to make that runtime. But what I did find, like I don't know why I didn't catch it, probably because I was 15 when the movie came out. But there's the scene in the House of Wax remake where, like, Paris Hilton's going down on the guy and he's videotaping it and it's in, like, night vision. I was like, oh, those shady bastards. That's so funny.
So funny. Yeah.
That was my doorstep, guys. How was your doorstep?
Awesome. I got a lot of crap, but haven't watched a lot of it, but I do have a couple that I can get to.
You didn't watch stuff? No way.
I know. But the two things that I did do want to talk about is Synapse, their Blu-ray of the movie Screamers.
Screamers what?
You know, or it's also known as Something Waits in the Dark.
That's not Synapse, it's Scorpion.
The Scorpion? It's Scorpion. I apologize. I was going to say, you know what, I think Synapse is better than this, because this movie is a bag of shit.
Well, I'm sorry that you watched a bag of shit. That's not fun.
You know, I'd never seen it, and I'd heard, you know, I'd seen it pop up on, you know, different people's whenever they got stuff, and they're, you know, the cover, the reverse cover is awesome. It makes you kind of think that you're getting a kind of humanoids from the deep type flick, and it's like, apparently it was an Italian flick. I think it was produced by Roger Corman, or he bought the rights to the Italian film, and they cut in like gore and some of the things, and kind of worked this Italian film which I can't remember the original name of it. Something about, like, the fish people.
Something, Island of the Fishmen.
Yeah, Island of the Fishmen. And cut in some gore and everything. But the problem is Island of the Fishmen is pretty damn boring. So, anyway, it's just not that good. I was bored as shit. But there is an interview with Joe Dante and Jim Warnowski and Roger Corman and Clark Henderson. So that was kind of a thing that kind of sold me on it as well. So I haven't got to those interviews yet. But I did finish the movie and I was let down.
It's a movie.
It's there.
It's a movie.
It's a movie. But, you know, watch Humanoids from the Deep instead and you'll be far more entertained. That would be my suggestion. And then the next thing I wanted to talk about...
Well, just to let you know about Screamers...
Oh, well,
is that
Brad,
what
do you think?
It was picked up for U.S. distribution, and then they filmed a new intro. Right, okay. They put the gore in there to make it... you know, I think they even put Mel Frere and Cameron Mitchell in it. You know, just definitely a lot of... because originally it was Sergio Martino... That shot the film, and then they went back and redid a whole lot of stuff. But it actually is a sequel to shit.
Well, I think it's a sequel. I think it's the first movie was shit.
Killer Fish is the original, is the first one, and then which Scorpion released, and then Screamers was the sequel.
Really?
Yeah, I want to say so.
Huh. That'd be interesting.
So, anyways, it's actually not that bad of a movie at all. You just don't like things.
Whenever you go off in these tangents, I always want to be like, "Man, I bet you're really fun to hang out with at parties." And then I'm like, "Wait, the people who are listening to this podcast are listening precisely for these tangents, so I can't even talk shit."
Oh well. Part of the problem, I think, with some of these movies, too, is like they would probably be funner to watch with a group of people.
Did you say funner?
Funner. More fun.
Yeah. I hang out with children most of my days
and with the weekend. More fun. Fuck you guys.
Thank you. I hang out with kids all day, and they're not even my kids.
That's not fair.
Anyway, it would be more fun to watch maybe with a group of people. It was me by myself at freaking 11 o'clock at night. And, you know, that just did not work for me.
Oh. Well, whatever. I think that this movie turned out to be a trilogy because I think Martino did another film about fishermen. I think it's called The Fishmen or some bullshit like that.
I bet it's called The Seamen.
Yeah,
I've been waiting to make that joke for like 4 minutes.
But yeah, I mean, Sergio Martino is not that bad of a director. I mean, he directed a few Giallo films. He, you know, did I think he did 2019 after Fall in New York. So yeah, he's a decent filmmaker. I wouldn't say Screamers is like amazing, but I think it's at least a fun movie. At least.
Hmm.
Okay. And we already know that Sean doesn't like fun.
I do like fun. My next movie, talking about, I got the Mimic 3-film set.
Oh, yeah.
For like $7.99. So I couldn't resist. I haven't seen the sequels yet, but I do love the director's cut of Mimic. I think it improves on the film, but I already liked the first cut of Mimic anyway. So having it, you know, Guillermo del Toro recut this into a director's cut wasn't necessary, and changing the ending up a little bit wasn't necessary, but I think it's a stronger cut, but I'm a huge fan of Mimic. I understand these sequels are not on that level at all, but I'm excited to check
Mimic
them out.
Mimic 3 is better.
Is it? Okay. Well, I'm excited to check these out, but Mimic's a great flick. And a lot of fun. I have fun.
See,
with
I actually it don't is fun. Care for. I don't care for Mimic that much. I actually like the sequels a lot better.
Oh, look who doesn't like fun.
Huh. Funny.
Whoa.
No, I didn't say
tables
I hated
have turned.
It.
I don't even
said,
know what to do.
It's all good. It's all good.
I need you to relax for a second. No, I think Mimic 2 is better than Mimic, and I think Mimic 3 is better than Mimic 2.
Well, cool. That gives me that makes me pumped to watch these.
Well, that means that you're probably not going to like them. Well, J.T. Petty directed Mimic 3, and like I think literally he's probably one of the best directors out there that's not getting work.
Poor guy.
After he did Mimic the Sentinel, he did Sandman. Did you ever see Sandman?
Yes. Oh, he directed
that? He did that.
Oh, okay.
And he did The Burrowers. That's a fucking fantastic horror
I western. Love The Burrowers. Yep, I'm a fan. It's fabulous.
I'm a fan of The Burrowers as well.
And then he did Hellbenders, which has moments. It's just not that great.
Oh, okay.
But anyways, yeah, I think he's a fucking superb director. And I think he, like, Soft for Digging was his first movie. It's not, has potential, but it's only like an hour, so you don't, it's not that bad. But Mimic Sentinel was really fucking cool. So anyways, enjoy it.
Awesome. Good. And then finally, I pre-ordered Mad Max Fury Road through Best Buy, and they gave me the digital code early. So my wife and I checked it out on the small screen, and she dug the hell out of it, which is awesome.
Oh, cool. Uh-huh.
And I think it holds up. Like, it's one of those movies, definitely see it. It's like you got to see that sucker on the biggest screen possible. I mean, it's just one of those movies. But it's refreshing when, you know, it still holds up on a home viewing. But definitely, if this is a movie that needs to kind of make the theater rounds again, you know, every few years, because seen on the home on my and I have a pretty decent sized screen and everything and pretty decent setup. But it does lose a little bit, but it's fantastic. Well, I got to tell you guys, we've already talked.
I mean, you didn't have it loud enough.
Oh, dude, we were cranking it, man. It was awesome. It sounds phenomenal. And this is just through the Vudu stream. Like, you know, it's looked and sounded great. We had a few little hiccups with the digital service, which kind of always pisses me off, because I'm like, see, Blu-rays, we would never have this interruption. But once we got through that, and it looked pretty stellar, and I can't wait to watch it again to see how even better it's going to look on the Blu-ray. So I don't know if they still have that deal, but they had it was like a day where they said
no, they sold out.
Did they sell out?
Sold out that day.
Nice. Well, I think studios need to do that shit more, or you know, stores need that more, because I think that is an awesome deal to pre-order something and then you get it the digital file early. That's awesome. More of that, please. All right.
Yeah, that's Brad. Pretty great.
Brad, what you got, man?
Well, I was going to say what you probably need to do is you need to take a break from Island of the Fishmen and actually watch Peter Weller's Screamers.
I have the VHS of that.
I think you would enjoy that a lot more.
That movie's okay. It's all right. It has moments of genius, like the freaking robot teddy bear things or whatever. That's great.
Oh, my God.
Bit of a gore here and there.
Like, I've said this time and time again. You are truly a summer blockbuster child.
No, dude, I like, there's certain movies I like. It's just Screamers kind of has little bouts of awesomeness, but I think, but a lot of that, like the Peter Weller Screamers, but it got kind of boring. But I would like to see that out on an HD release.
Sean, I feel like you are our little brother.
I know. I was on a podcast a while ago.
Sorry, I feel like you're our little brother that we have to be like, Sean, I promise, like, movies that aren't Transformers are cool. And you're like, no, I like it, it blows up. And we're like, no, Sean, like, you should watch this. And you're like, but that's stupid.
I was excited to watch Peter Weller's Screamers. I was, like, super pumped. I saw it at a thrift store, and I was going to be on, some dude had a podcast, like, it was years ago, a VHS podcast. And he's like, dude, do you want to come on the show and talk? And what do you want to talk about? And I was like, dude, I'm at thrift store, and I got Screamers here, and they got one other. There's one other flick. It was awesome. And I can't remember. I'll have to find it.
Flesh Eating Mothers.
No. It was like this. It was like an action flick, and it was great. It was like, I think it was Mike Dudikoff in some. Not Mike Dudikoff. Anyway,
Michael Dudikoff.
No, it wasn't a Michael Dudikoff flick, but it was something like that. But the guy had like a motorcycle, and he like would drive the motorcycle into the elevator thing up to his like big old. Empty apartment in a, you know, some sort of district, some sort of industrial district, and he lived there. I can't remember what it was called, but that was awesome. But compared to that, you know, the Screamers was the one that we both agreed we were kind of bored by. So I'm not the only one, Brad. But I do appreciate
you and that other guy. That podcast still around since the 80s Screamers.
He's still doing this. I think
our little brothers always have friends.
So. Yeah, you know. But I appreciate. I do appreciate Screamers.
You
but
should.
For me, it was. You know, I don't know. RoboCop's awesome. I mean, come on.
Well, dude. Yeah, I'm just glad that you actually like it because. That'd have been really weird if you didn't like RoboCop.
Yeah,
we wouldn't be allowed to be friends anymore.
Those are the Touchstone flicks that are like RoboCop. There's not
whatever
nothing
happened
like
to Touchstone. Who'd they get that out by?
Disney.
Disney.
Yeah,
makes sense. Disney owns everything.
They do, man. They're building a Star Wars land. They're gonna knock down this nice little kid town, little kid Toontown.
No one gives a fuck about Disney.
And they're gonna knock it down and make Star Wars land.
No one fucking gives a fuck about Disney. That's
Disney doesn't give a fuck about Disney. It's all about Marvel and Star Wars.
Truth.
It's fine. It's the money for them, I guess.
They said,
hey, all their sexual harassment lawsuits.
Oh, jeez. Just kill a joke. All right, never mind.
The killing joke is DC. You don't know anything.
No, they,
it's also a song by God Lives Underwater.
Yeah,
right?
All right, moving along. I was going to say, Disney says, screw you to their own property that actually made some decent money, Tron. But they're like, yeah, screw you, Tron. We got Star Wars now, so
Sit
in the corner.
You want to talk about one of the worst movies ever made, Tron Legacy was one of the worst movies ever made. But I'm sure you fucking love that shit so much.
It has a fantastic soundtrack. It's goofy.
Tron, it's goofy as hell.
Tron
tattoo
but,
on your chest and
No. It's goofy and I like it and I have fun with it. But it's not a good movie. I agree with you there. I still like it though.
A real life replica of the like light bike. That'd be badass though. If you had one, I'd come over.
I like the
idea. She just bought Olivia Wilde. She just lived with
it. Yeah, exactly. The idea of both movies, like even the original Tron's not that good. Like, but like the setup of those movies and the premise is greater than, I think, the movies as a whole, but they each have some pretty great little moments. And Jeff Bridges. The thing that killed Tron Legacy was freaking digital Jeff Bridges, man. That was the worst. I was like,
his soulless eyes.
I can't believe that got out the door, you know, quality control. They said, it looks okay enough. And you're supposed to be, in the digital world, I can kind of get that, but whatever. But he's supposed to be like, real with the kid, and it's just the worst effects ever, and that killed
really
a lot of them.
Pretty sure Last Starfighter has pretty bad special effects.
Oh god, that's pretty bad, but that movie's awesome. But those effects are shit. All right, Brad, what do you got?
Well, a movie that I talked about a little while ago, I'll just reiterate because it's out on Blu-ray now, is a Big Game with Samuel Jackson. It's by the guy that directed Rare Exports. President gets lost, or his plane goes down, kid is out in the woods hunting and shit, saves the president against all the espionage and bad guys. So it's a fun flick. I mean, it's not anything major. It's not wonderful. It's just a fun, campy throwback of being a kid watching movies like in the 80s. One thing I did watch, I didn't get anything really new in there, but I did want to talk about a couple things because I talked about them earlier on social media today, and then I realized a lot of people didn't know about it. So another one that I watched with Willow was The Willies, which is
I love The Willies.
A pretty underrated kids movie, horror anthology that really doesn't get talked about all that much. That's by Echo Bridge on DVD, and I swear to God, you might as well just buy the VHS copy because it is really bad. But anyways, it's got a great cast. It's directed by Brian Peck, who is in Return of Living Dead. So I guess it could be that since it's the 30-year anniversary for Return of Living Dead. This is me celebrating, people. But it's got, you know, Sean Astin. It has James Caan. Dana Ashbrook has a cameo. Doug Benson, which I don't really care for. How do you say his last name? Gulliger? Gulliger.
Clue Gulliger. I always thought it was Gulliger.
Gulliger. There we go. Kirk Cameron is in it. Tracy Gold. It's a fucking fun cast. You know, it's a continuation of Mikey from the Goonies in a way, because he kind of plays the same character. And there's a reference to him actually being a Goonie, and his name's Michael. So that's always a lot of fun. But anyways, it's just three kids around a campfire telling stories. A couple of this anthology stories are really short, and then two of them are a little bit longer. But it's a lot of fun. It's really fun to watch with the kids because it is kind of creepy, and the special effects are really good, aside from the fly people. But all in all, it's a decent flick, and I think it's cheap on DVD. You could probably pick it up. It's Echo Bridge DVD, so it should be cheap. But their stuff goes out of print really quickly, so make sure you pick it up. And the other thing that I watched The Shining on Blu-ray, of course, but it reminded me of the – I mentioned this on Twitter, that there's a superior cut of The Shining that Stanley Kubrick called it. And it's kind of – it's not released in the U.S. apparently, because the tapes, the DVD, Blu-ray is 144 minutes. But there is a version that's under 2 hours. And a follower of mine actually pointed out where I could pick it up. It's a UK Blu-ray, and it's supposed to be an hour and 59 minutes. And because Kubrick cut, I think he said a total of like 30 minutes or 31 minutes, whatever the original running time is, I forget. But it's supposed to be eerier, kind of just kind of almost in the state of confusion, as well as a little bit unnerving how it's paced. So I picked that up today. Of course, we'll report back when I watch it. But that's one thing that a lot of people don't know is that there's a different version of The Shining out there that actually was in theaters because they screened, I guess, the longer version, and people kind of got restless and bored. So he cut another version, and then when it ultimately was released on a physical format, it was the longer version. So, and you guys aren't saying anything. Do you know anything about this? No.
No,
I know about it, but I've never seen it. Because whenever I think my mom had seen it in the shorter format, because one of the first times we ever watched it together, she said, "This feels so much longer than when I first saw it in the theater." And it took her a while before she realized, you know, oh, I don't think I saw the same movie. But my mom has terrible memory. So she had always told me that, like, no, it's shorter than this. It's not this long. And it wasn't until, I don't know, maybe like 6 months ago that I'd even heard of this different cut. But I've never seen it, so I'm really interested to hear what you say.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about watching it. It's just the regular UK Blu-ray that was released. And, you know, like I said, a lot of people didn't know it existed. And then, you know, a lot of people didn't know the hour and 144-minute cut existed. So it's kind of funny because I ran into a couple people that only saw the two-hour version. And I was like, oh, man, you have no idea what you're missing. Because I think I ultimately, even though I haven't seen it yet, I think I'll prefer the longer version just because I really like that pacing, because I think it's a really good setup. And I'll kind of be sad to see that go. But, you know, it's kind of maybe like Dawn of the Dead. Argento's cut of Dawn of the Dead is far more superior than the U.S. Theatrical version or anything Romero wanted to do with it. But anyways.
Them's fighting words in some circles.
What?
That the Argento cut of Dawn of the Dead is better.
Oh, God.
I think I mentioned that once on Twitter. And somebody
it's tremendously better. The score is different. The score is different. It's actually more intense and, you know, a little bit scarier, because the original Dawn of the Dead's a little comical.
Yeah.
And with Argento's version, he made a more serious took by editing and, you know, the scenes put together in the music arrangement. It makes it more of a horror film than kind of a bumbling, because literally the zombies are fucking idiots. That's what it seems like. And then the idiocracy rubs off on our survivors, and they're like, look, fun. Let me put a hat on him. And it's like, okay, well, that could be. And then they play that fucking circus music throughout the movie. So it's kind of interesting to see that. Speaking of different versions, Willow, my 10-year-old, fucking loves Kill Bill. So she was begging to watch.
Bless you.
I'm so sorry.
That was a cute sneeze, though.
I'm sorry. I sound like a squeak toy. But yeah, Kill Bill, let's get serious and tough and shit. After I just made that sound.
She loves Kill Bill. I introduced her a while ago. So I figured, you know, depending on how she took it, I was like, all right, let's bust out. I have a fan edit, apparently, which I found out later on today. I was a little upset about, but it's fine. I have a fan edit of the whole bloody affair that's put together with the black and white is gone. It's full color. The extra scenes are added during the crazy 88 fight, the shout out on the House of Blue Leaves.
Cool. So
I wanted her to see that because it was like, all right, we're going to get a little bit bloodier now because the fucking uncut version is ridiculously bloody. Like, there's that fanfare that says, oh, Tarantino did it for artistic. No, he fucking cut it because he had to.
Yeah, he had to avoid the NC-17. I guarantee you that scene in the Crazy 88 scene would have got NC-17 right away.
Oh, no, yeah, that's the reason why as soon as she gouges out the eye, it turns to black and white. It's not an artistic, like, oh, let me do this. No, that whole thing was supposed to be filmed and shown in color, but he had to cut it to black and white. Well, it is in color, and it is fucking brutal, and there's also additional scenes that are added. I think it's like nine scenes of extra gore and, you know, body parts being chopped off. And you can tell, because it's funny, because it's like, you know, sometimes you'll watch, you know, oh, this version is 72 minutes of a movie, and this is 74, and then you have no idea where that 2 minutes came in. But Kill Bill, you could say, okay, that was definitely not there before, because it is fucking ridiculous. I mean, there's heads being chopped off and hoses of, blood going through. Because there's this one sequence where she chops off this guy's head, and then he, like, wobbles through the crowd of people with blood spurting everywhere. but, no, it's a lot of fun. And it's just – it truly is one of my favorite movies. I think it's definitely one of Tarantino's best. And,
agreed.
You know, Willow just likes to watch. You know, it shows you something because she said this today, and I really don't have any push for this. And I never really say this around her, but I said, you know, she was like, what do you want? I said, what do you want to watch? And she said, you know, Kill Bill. And I was like, we just watched that not that long ago. What do you want to watch that again for? She goes, well, I'm tired of movies where girls have short skirts on and they're heroes. And I was like, what? And she was
representation's important, man.
Yeah. I was like, what?
It's so important.
And she was like, the bride wears the jumpsuit most of the time and she's really pretty. And I was like, all right. I was like, that's fine. I'm not going to say anything.
That's but super cool, man.
I thought that was really bizarre coming from a 10-year-old. That's the reason why you want to watch it, not because it's fun and it's bloody, but you get tired of seeing heroes, how they're portrayed. You know, let's put high heels and a skirt on them and have them kick ass. They can still kick ass in a Bruce Lee jumpsuit.
Yeah.
But anyways.
You had a smart kid.
Thank you. Has she seen that action flick with that UFC fighter? What's her name? She's been in the Fast and Furious and stuff now.
Gina Carano?
Yeah. What was that movie she was in?
In the Blood? Fast and Furious 6.
No.
Haywire.
Because she kicks ass in that movie, and it's kind of a joke when in one scene when she's wearing a skirt, you know what I mean? But
I have to show
Willow that movie.
Yeah, she might like that. I can't remember. Is there? Well, I mean, there's. I have to skip forward a few things and Kill Bill.
I don't think there's any naughty bits in that one. I think she's just, she's pretty friggin' kick ass in it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about Tarantino's movies that I was actually thinking about later on. Everything he's directed, there's not really too much sexuality, but when there is, it's really like disturbing, kind of like, I'm Buck and I'm here to fuck type thing, and they're fucking dead bodies or the coma patients.
Yeah. I love how he handles sexuality in his films. And
yeah, I mean, it's there, but it's like, it's always like really heavy, but it doesn't ever go overboard. And I always kind of like how he does that. Yeah. So. But I have to fast forward that part a little bit. But that's pretty much it. I mean, everything else, the only other sexual part is when Bobo says, "Do you want to penetrate me?" And then she stabs the dude. But Willow has no idea what penetrate means. So I think it's just.
I do still think that it's fascinating, but it's the sexuality that you're hiding and like. Decapitation and blood gush is like that's fair game. Like my parents were the complete opposite. Like they were like this is sex, this is boobs, this is what this is, and you're going to learn about it. And then they would be like, no guns. You can't make a gun out of Legos. I was like, okay, fine, but I guess I won't. I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, I think it stems from, you know, because when she was younger, I would show her, you know, stuff like Gremlins and, you know, the Monster Squad, stuff that's a little, you know, toned down with, you know, gore and violence and stuff. But however, whenever I made my first short film and Willa was a star, we had to do a lot of special effects. We had her arm ripped off, we had her eye gouged out, and we had pig guts on her. So I think that whole thing, being in the experience, seeing it, and then seeing it on screen, and knowing how fake it is.
That's true.
Whenever Willow saw that, then I saw her, like, watching other movies, and then she would, like, turn and say, man, that's really, really bad special effects. And, like, she would notice that in movies. Like, she was like Sean. She was just being a complete dick about everything. But, you know, she would say things, and I was like, okay, you get it. Like, you understand that this is a movie and this is not real. So therefore I opened up the door a lot. So now when she sees stuff, she always says, you know, she was like, cause she even said, she turned to me like later on, halfway through the, I think it was during Crazy 88 Fighter after it, she goes, I wonder how many gallons of blood they had to use. And I like looked it up and I was like, oh, they used 450 gallons of blood in Kill Bill. And she was like, oh, that's a lot. So, you know, she understands
Willow
that.
Willow is my hero.
So, but it's just the sexuality thing, because, I mean, certain things. I mean, she watches The Office with us, and there's a lot of sexuality in that, you know, talk about boners and shit like that. But, you know, I think for the most part, you know, kids are going to find out, and they're smarter than, you know, people are like, I'm not going to let my kid know about it. And I was like, your kid probably already fucking knows.
I knew in second grade.
Yeah, they go to public school. They fucking know. Even they go to private school. They fucking know.
I went to private school and knew in second grade.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and
the only difference between private school and public school is private school is better drugs. That's it.
And it's so funny because, you know, even parents today, they think kids are stupid. And kids aren't stupid. They're more observant.
Oh, no.
They're more observant. They understand more than you think. And they can work out. They're like little mini scientists,
because they
figure things out quicker than the average adult does. They could put two and two together. They're not stupid. And it's so funny when people are like, oh, my kid's not going to know about that until they're 12. Bitch, they already fucking know, and they're probably doing it.
Yeah. Like,
you know, just calm down. Just, you know, talk to your kid. Talk to him. Show it to him. Talk to him. Show him. I mean, I'm not saying that you have to let your kid watch horror films. I mean, that's my, you know, I don't think every kid is ready to do that. I think you have to assess your child, see where their mind is, see how well they perceive things or don't, and then make that judgment call. Because I've had a lot of people say, why do you show your kid that? That's terrible. And it's like, she gets it, though. It's not...
Well, that's also goes to show the importance of movies like, you know, like the Willies, where, like, that's, I would consider a very transitionary horror film, like the same way that I would consider like Gremlins, where it's not so over the top that you're going to have to worry about like traumatizing them, but it's just enough that, you know, they can, you know, look at Billy Peltzer's eyes and feel justified in the way that they're feeling. Like, oh, I feel scared. Oh, he feels scared too. That means it's okay for me to feel scared. Whereas, like, if you just throw them to the wolves, then they're not going to know how to handle it. But, yeah that's fun.
Awesome. And this has been Parenting Sex Corner.
Yeah.
But that's about it. I mean, I didn't have...
Why don't we just do that?
I don't think I had anything else per se, because I've just been kind of busy with other things. I mean, I watched the Arrow movies, which we'll talk about later, but that's pretty much all I watched.
Awesome.
Cool.
All right, well, let's jump into the interview with Arrow Films Video, and BJ will join us after this for our two little segments. We are very excited for today's guests. Today we have a couple of the gentlemen from Arrow Films and Video on the show. We have Francesco Simeoni and Ewan Cant on the show. Welcome, guys.
Thank you very much.
Hello, thanks for having us.
We're huge fans of Arrow Films over here. I discovered you guys back when the awesome Battle Royale box set was released. And that was like, when I heard about that, I immediately, I think I pre-ordered it from Amazon UK. And I had a big shipping fiasco where it was lost for like a month. But it did finally arrive on my doorstep. But that was my first experience with you guys, was excitement and dread all at the same time. Because this awesome box set was missing somewhere between the UK and California.
You just won't ever let that go. Well, you talk about that a lot.
It was traumatizing. It's pretty traumatizing.
You talked about that on the last show.
So I've been a fan ever since. You guys were the main reason why I bought a region-free Blu-ray player. This is before the U.S. announcement. And so Arrow Films, for me, always has a special place in my heart. So welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you. You feel very welcome.
So, I think the first and foremost is how long have you been with Arrow, and tell the audience kind of what your exact roles are there.
Okay, so I've been with Arrow since 2010, and I am the director of the label, so I handle all the acquisitions and oversee the production strategy and what we're doing next, how we're going to do it. And it's very collaborative as a team, so we all chip in and talk about what kind of releases we'd like to do and what films we think we should do and what we shouldn't do, how we might treat them when they're released. And I've been doing that since 2010, as the team has grown much larger since then. And the current team has been in place since around 2013, ish.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's about it, really.
So I've been with Arrow now, well, the years have flown by, just over 2 years. And I produce produce releases, mainly the bulk of our horror releases, because that's what I would say my area of expertise is, and my area of love. So basically anything with death or necrophilia tends to come my way, and I'm more than happy with that arrangement.
Awesome. That's one thing I want to, I'm, you know, with kind of the diversity of the titles that selected, you know, because we have many companies in the U.S. that are, you know, doing lots of things, and you guys were always in the UK, and it was a little harder for people to get, and there's always that, you know, region unlocked question that always came up. So yeah, I was like Sean way back in the day. I bought a region free player just so I could have some of your films, because over here they weren't getting maybe the best treatment. Every time you guys release anything, it's really never subpar. Like, it's always everything that we can do for this film, whether, you know, no matter what the special features are, we're going to pack it loaded. The same thing is, like, you know, you guys actually release Contamination over here. And if people haven't seen Contamination, it's kind of mind-blowing that something like that is on Blu-ray with such an amazing package and special feature, special features are out of this world. So I was just curious of how, you know, like you said, you know, things come your way, but how do you pick and choose? Because with this last batch, let's just say, we have, you know, Contamination, we have Jack Hill's Pit Stop, we have the Stray Cat Rock box set, Cemetery Without Crosses, Happiness with Katakuri. So we have, you know, Italian trash, we have Jack Hill, who is a prolific filmmaker, we have a batshit box of Stray Cat Rock, which is insane movies. And then, you know, a Miike film, Happiness at the Katakuri's. Like, how do you actually pick and choose what you're going to release? And, you know, do you try to be that diverse, or is it just based on what you love or what you just think will sell, or how does that really work?
Well, I think shortly after I started at Arrow, the Arrow video had already been going about a year, and it had mainly focused on horror and Jelly, but it had some like Caligula, and we had bought another few titles like Battle Royale. And I thought to myself, if we just keep doing horror and Jelly, we're going to be struggling for titles in 5 years' time. And I think anyone who likes these kinds of movies is going to be really interested in other kinds of cult films. And since our acquisitions have gone that way anyway, I said, well, let's broaden it out, because if you like Italian horror, there's a good chance you like Italian spaghetti westerns. So
yes,
let's do a bit of everything and just create awesome releases rather than doing a very narrow slice of cinema and kind of scraping the barrel in a few years' time. So that was the start. And as time went on, we had these different kinds of opportunities to do these films, and it mainly came out of either our own tastes or the tastes of our fans. Always been very communicative with our fans, saying, email us what you want, write on our Facebook or tweet us. And that still happens a lot. And so our fans provide a lot of inspiration, but we also think about what we'd like to release. So the diverse nature of our slate is very much a representation of those two sources, really. As to whether or not it's intentional that we're that diverse, yeah, I suppose so. I mean, if you release 5 great horror films in a month, not everyone's going to be able to afford them. So you split it up and keep people guessing, and you have different things to offer. It's a lot of fun, and
yeah,
you can make a lot of different discoveries that way. Like, a lot of people maybe won't be familiar with Stray Cat Rock, but if you say to yourself, I want to buy 3 releases this month, the third you might choose is Stray Cat Rock, and you'll find out about something amazing.
That's what struck me about you guys in particular was your kind of relationship with fans and of the label, because I've experienced that myself, because just throughout the years buying releases and on Twitter and everything, the conversation back and forth and anything that was tweeted my way from you guys was always very positive and very encouraging to keep the dialogue going, and as opposed to, you know, other labels that I've dealt with, you know, you guys really encourage the fan involvement. And I'm sure, like, you guys deal with overbearing fans and things like that, but I think it should be noted how appreciative that everyone is and how you guys relate to your customers, you know. And it seems like a little bit of a collaborative effort in a way, which is really fantastic.
Yeah,
it is, definitely. I mean, you know, the releases are for the fans first and foremost, mm-hmm. So they should definitely be the ones to say, it would be cool if you did this, or have you thought about doing that? So, you know, the fans are the ones that dictate what we do and how we do it, and we do solicit feedback as much as possible, but, I mean, obviously we want to stay in business as long as possible, so we have to think about what's realistic and not go completely nuts, mm-hmm. Although we did go completely nuts from time to time, and, you know, release 5 box sets in a row, but, you know,
right,
it's out of love, because we love our jobs and we love releasing these films, so that's the way it goes, and it's been successful till now, so hopefully we can keep doing it and doing more.
Well, that's what Brad said, is you guys treat each film with the respect that film and the filmmakers and the fans of those films deserve, because every movie seems to get, with the exception of some box sets here and there, you know, like, say, for example, Society's box set is just incredible. But even with the standard releases, you guys treat each one respectively, and you'll do special box art for each release, and it's really cool seeing the care you guys put into each of these. Do you guys have a specific artist you work with for the artwork, or do you guys have a kind of a few artists? Because the original artwork for me is always, I always want to see what you guys are going to do, how you guys are going to interpret, you know, the film through the art.
Well, we have a number of different artists. I think we've got maybe about 20 on the roster at the moment.
Okay.
And you can see a lot of them on our blog as well. And I mean, each artist is different, but it's always very collaborative, and sometimes we'll approach more than one person. But as regards society, Ewan can tell you more about that process.
Yeah, I mean, it's this as Fran said, we have like a roster of artists that we work with, and some kind of suggest themselves kind of naturally to certain titles. Graham Humphreys, who's like a renowned UK poster artist, is normally our go-to guy for a lot of our Bava releases. He's done most of those. In other cases, you know, you look at the film and you kind of, you know, you sort of try and get an idea of who might be able to kind of create the kind of vision that you kind of think that that release should have. So with Society, you know, I knew that I wanted to, so the jumping off point was the idea of kind of the shunting and having like all these kind of characters kind of melting into each other. And, so for that, I kind of, you know, looked around at the artists that we worked with. And I actually came across Nick Percival, who'd done a few Fangoria covers. And that's very much his kind of, his style is the more kind of fantastic, kind of imagery. And so I you know, approached him about that because I thought that that would be a really good one for him to do.
Nice.
I think it turned out how I wanted it to turn out. And I think, you know, there's been really good feedback, like from yourselves just now. So hopefully it was the right decision.
Well, it definitely is one you want to put on your shelf. And what I appreciate, yeah. I mean, I just watched Society for the first time ever last night. So, so no. what's you're great.
You're still cleaning yourself up then.
Yeah. Yeah. On Twitter, we were joking around like how much, you know, how much KY jelly was used in the filming of that film.
Yeah.
But what's great is even the cover, like now that I've seen the film, even the cover for me, being a first-time viewer, it was intriguing, and I'm like, what the hell is this? But it didn't spoil anything for the film itself. I knew something was messed up with the film, but I kind of just, and that was it in the back of my mind. But still, once it gets to the film's moments, it's it's just fantastic. So, and I held off on reading.
That can also be a challenge with the artwork sometimes, right. Is not also not giving a spoiler as well, but you kind of want to kind of sum up what the film's all about, yeah. As well at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's really like fine balance that, you know, that we have to kind of trade with that. But it's, for me, it's like one of the most fun aspects of producing the releases is being able to kind of be creative sort of by proxy, you know, with our artists and kind of maybe coming up with a concept or working it through with them and seeing it come to life. For me, is like one of the really satisfying aspects of the role.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's something
to say. And that can extend to packaging as well, like with Society, with the finish and the embossing that we got on it. So it was really fun to create that.
Mm.
And to do that for all the titles as well.
Yeah, one of my colleagues in our office didn't actually even want to touch the box for a long time because she just thought it just looked too icky. So I knew the my work was complete at that point.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think one thing is something to say with these titles especially is that some of the cover art, even myself being a fan of these films, I look at, you know, the art that's done for the title by you guys, and then I ponder, I was like, wait, is this the original? Or, and then I like flip it over and I was like, oh, okay, that's the original. I think out of all the companies that actually do their own artwork for the films, it's the closest to being kind of the somewhat of the original and feels normal rather than something that you know that's fan made. Because that's kind of what, you know, nowadays with some of this reverse artwork, that's kind of how it's leading to, is that all the artwork looks the same. You kind of know who does it. With your titles, most of the time, it's, you look at it, because I remember looking at Cemetery Without Crosses, and I was like, wait a second, like, that looks really fucking good. And then I flipped it over, and I was like, okay, that's the original. It's so close. And I think that's what a lot of fans love, is kind of, you know, they do look vintage. The artwork looks vintage, or it is creative, like Happiness of the Katakuris, extremely creative on that part. So, you know, I think that's something to say when your fans are actually keeping, you know, your artwork on the cover rather than flipping it around, which, you know, I'm always a flipper. I always go to the original, but with yours, I still ponder if I should. So, but anyways.
Yeah, it's always a toss-up with me. Like, do I keep the original? Do I keep this artwork? Do I flip it? It's I think the Arrow films, especially with the artwork, is for me too. There's other ones that I just flip over right away. Unfortunately, Criterion doesn't do reverse artwork, which on some of their titles I wish they would. Like, their artwork for The Brood is just not my cup of tea.
We'll not talk about that.
Okay.
We won't talk about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think
it's... Brad, can I ask, is there any artworks that you haven't flipped? One being a flip?
Well, for me, for Cemetery Without Crosses, I didn't flip. Pit Stop, Spider Baby, I didn't flip.
Okay.
Let's see what else. Happiness of the Katakuris, I didn't flip because I think that cover's fucking great. Because I think the original's kind of weak anyway. But yeah, I think it's something to say when sometimes your artwork is better than the original, and you know it emulates the original to itself. Like I can't believe how close Cemetery Without Crosses is. Like both of those covers, the original's great, but your cover is phenomenal on that. So yeah, I think for the fans, that's a huge selling point. And you know, of all the companies that actually get it, I think that's something to say for you as well. And you know, something as long the lines as some of these movies that people haven't heard of, like Cemetery Without Crosses, I can't imagine a lot of people knowing about. But with your releases, the packaging, the artwork, the special features, the transfers, that's why people blind buy your films, and you know they're willing to take that chance. So, you know, keep doing what you're doing because you're obviously doing something right by listening to the fans and making it so diverse. Like you said, you know, the horror. Yeah, we all love horror films. I mean, that's my biggest thing. I can't, you know, I love when you guys announce things. I like Blood Rage and The Mutilator. Like, I can't believe in 2015 I'll be in my home in September watching Blood Rage and The Mutilator on Blu-ray, because those are two of my all-time favorite slashers. And when you guys announced those, I just, like, it was almost the point of, like, being, like, a little kid. Like, I just started, like, shaking. I was like, oh, my God, like, you know, finally these movies are getting released. I mean, I'm like that with, you know, everything that you guys released, like, especially the Yakuza papers, you know, that big box that you guys are releasing in November. I couldn't believe it. Like, I was just like, holy shit. You know, like, everything that I want, you know, like, I really, really want you guys are doing. So I'm hoping that acquisitions keep happening and you snatch things up before other people do. Not knocking on other companies, of course. But, you know, I would prefer if Harrow released a coffee over here instead of, you know, Olive Films picked it up, which was just a disc with the movie. You know, obviously we can buy the UK copy from you guys. But, you know, it's just giving films what they deserve. And I think that's a big part of it. You know, because I'm thankful for any company that releases movies over here, because they're giving the movie more life, more shelf life, new discovery for people. But, you know, I really like to see people take the time and not just slap it on a disc and then put it out there, or the HD master. You know, you guys do the new high definition transfers. You guys find fucking TV like spots for things that are just weird. And, you know, interviews from, you know, anything from film historians to experts on, like, you know, it was, who did you get for the, it was the Japanese, Massacre Gun and
Tony Rains.
Yeah. You got him for the you know, that segment, just to explain what these movies mean and what they mean to him and kind of the history, you know, because some of these films, no one in the film is left alive. Like, everybody's has passed it, or they're too hard to find. But you guys always do the, let's find a film historian, let's find an expert on the subject and do an interview with them. And sometimes that's actually more interesting than the director or filmmakers themselves, because they shed new light on different things. So I think that's another thing that you guys are doing great. And I am sorry that I'm just kind of like sucking your guys' dicks right here, but you know, that's just kind of
Well, I thought this was a family show. It's fine,
family. Yeah, but yeah, that's pretty much my two cents. Just for you know, because I think a lot of things is on our past Arrow show, we covered all of the U.S. releases up until I think Stray Cat Rock. And the reason why we did the show was because we wanted to justify prices for people. Because when you first came out, everybody was super excited, but I think a lot of people were a little bummed out by the prices because over here they're like $25 for a release. So we wanted to talk about each individual release, giving people reason why this is something that you should buy or, you know, take a chance on. Just because when, like I said, people like to blind buy, like, oh, I trust Arrow, I'm going to buy this, but why do I want to spend $50 on two releases? That's a lot of money when I can, you know, buy a, you know, a few Blue Underground titles or a few Scream Factory titles, something that I am actually familiar with. So the reason why we did that show is to tell people, hey, you need to fucking buy Day of Anger because it's literally one of the best Westerns ever made. Mm-hmm. You know, that was me, of course. Because that's my, you know, end-all, be-all of fucking Westerns. But, you know, I think the price points, making people trust what you release, so that way they don't have to question the price of these titles. And just making that connection with fans, like, hey, this is our price. This is the movie. Take a chance on it, and you probably won't. Hopefully you won't regret it, but also the special features is something you're paying for too. Like sometimes those actually might be more interesting than the movie itself. Like for example, I think Massacre Gun is a prime example of the special features are actually more interesting than the film. You know, so I think that's something to say is how much work goes into these, each and every release. I'm just kind of rambling now. Yeah, so stop.
Bouncing off that. Can you guys go into some detail about, because I know, for example, like Nightmare City is a film that you guys, I believe, have gone above and beyond trying to get the definitive version out there. And you guys had some issues with the restoration, right? Can you guys go into some detail on what the challenges you faced with Nightmare City and going from there, creating that release? Give people an example of what you guys did.
Yeah, well, Nightmare City was like a good 2 or 3 years in the works.
Yeah.
So we licensed the title and we had a deal in place that we could restore it. And the company that owned the film went ahead and restored it anyway. And when we got it, we said, look, this isn't up to our standards. We'd like to do it again. And when we eventually got the material, we found the negative, I remember if I can get this right, the negative was in such bad shape that when we went to restore it ourselves, it threw up some issues that were completely unavoidable. So we had a new restoration that had serious issues because that negative presented one set of problems, but the guys who'd restored it, who owned it, they'd used a different element. They'd used an inter-negative. So then that didn't have those issues, but it had other issues, and you can't combine the two. So we had two sets of restorations, neither of which was perfect. And the only way that we thought would be best to go forward was to say, look, you can watch this in two different versions. Perhaps one set of issues won't annoy you as much as another. So kind of take your pick. And we created a video explaining what these issues are and talking a bit about restoration processes and what goes into it and why these things happen. But ultimately, it comes down to the same old problem, really, is that a lot of negatives or preprint material isn't well kept. And if you leave it to rot, essentially, it will rot. And unless you've got millions of dollars at your disposal to do brand new photochemical restorations, these problems will never really go away. So it's a huge shame when you find elements are in that sort of shape. Mm-hmm. We're looking at restoring a few films right now, and one of the films has got Fuji rot, so we're trying to find alternate prints to try and make it work. But wherever possible, we'll always do as much as we can to eliminate those issues and present them as well as we can. I mean, you're talking about Cemetery Without Crosses. I mean, that's another one where the original negative wasn't available, so we had to go from an internegative. So that doesn't look as pristine as Day of Anger, but it's the best it's ever going to look until, you know, some billionaire steps in and, you know, waves a magic wand. But even then, they may not find the original negative because we didn't, and we always, you know, undertake thorough searches.
Yeah,
these are just some of the problems that you face.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we covered this on another show, Brad, but can you guys tell us the difference between an internegative and then the original negative? What's the difference between those two?
So when you shoot a film, the negative in the camera, that's the original negative, the original camera negative that they actually shot the film on. And then what's supposed to happen is that they take that negative back to the lab and then they make an interpositive. And so then that way they can put the negative away and never touch it again. Then from the interpositive, you strike an internegative. And then from the internegative, you make your 35mm release prints. So every time you access the internegative, it gets more and more fucked up, basically.
Right.
And that's so you don't damage your negative. And your interpositive is your step between, just in case something goes wrong, you need to make another internegative. So where possible, you'd always go back to the camera neg, and we have done that. We did that for Day of Anger, and we try and do that as much as possible. But sometimes negatives get lost or destroyed or have issues for various storage reasons, and you have to go from an interpositive, as we have done, we did for the... It's great. Internegative's a last resort, really.
And that's what you did with Cemetery... Because, like, seriously, with Cemetery Without Crosses, I mean, it was a 2K restoration, which, I couldn't believe, because I remember watching the film years and years and years ago, which was another title, I believe. I actually didn't pick it up. I didn't figure that out until later on, until after I got it. I was like, oh, shit, this is the movie that I saw when I was younger. What's the original title of this? I always forget.
It's also been distributed as The Rope and the Cult.
Yeah, that's it. So, watching that and then revisiting, because my dad was a huge Western buff. I mean, every Western you can fucking think of, he was right there watching it. When we used to go to the store to rent movies, he was the one that was renting from the old Western section. So that's my history on that. And then it's fun watching these Western, because you guys are really, like, one of the only companies other than maybe Blue Underground that's actually releasing old Westerns at this point. But, you know, it's one of my favorite releases recently. But I think this is a beautiful film, you know, just because it's maybe an interpositive, you know, maybe not what you wanted. But I think that's because I think a lot of people are thinking about the 2K, 4K thing. Like, oh, it's not 4K, but I don't want that. I've heard a lot of people say that, and I'm like, well, you know what? It still looks really good. And honestly, I don't know if you'd be able to tell the difference. It's the same thing as, like, you know, 1080i and 1080p when it came out. Like, really? Like, can you really tell the difference? You know?
Well, the thing is, it's 4K, 2K, but then you're still watching it in HD on your TV. It's not like you're watching it in 4K. I mean, the Blu-ray is going to be HD. So, I mean, the difference is you'd really need to be an expert to really see them.
Yeah.
Right.
4K is a lot of marketing for at the moment, really. I mean, for these kinds of titles, they're never going to get 4K. And don't get me started on 4K Blu-ray.
I just had a conversation with someone the other day about 4K, because he's talking to me about getting a 4K TV. And I'm like, to really tell the difference, you'd have to have, like, a TV as big as your wall. Like, it doesn't matter at this point where we're at, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but...
I did want to ask one question.
It's down to the industry as a whole, really, but...
I'm sorry, what was that?
It's down to the industry as a whole, really. I mean, the industry, the studios never really got behind Blu-ray, so whether or not they're really going to get behind 4K Blu-rays remains to be seen. It's a niche format, and not everyone's kind of admitted that to themselves. Yeah.
I was going to ask how much, you know, just, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. I was just kind of curious because there is a lot of, you know, in the Blu-ray community, which I'm not part of because I hate most of those people that, you know, because they're always so negative.
You hate the negative people, not most of those people.
Yeah, the negative
people. Some of them are our listeners of the show.
The negative people are overbearing sometimes. But anyways, I wanted to ask, with the release of Pit Stop, with that going on, because we had, yours was approved by Jack Hill. And then we also had a release over here from Code Red, which was, that was approved by Roger Corman. Now, was there any, like, did you guys, because you obviously worked with Jack Hill on Coffee and Spider Babies. So was that the main one that you went to, or did you approach Corman for the print? Because this is a digital transfer, correct?
Our one was basically a 2K restoration of Jack's personal answer print. So that's like the fine grain positive, the interpositive, effectively.
Yeah.
I think, if I remember correctly. That was a couple of years ago. It just made sense to stick with Jack. I mean, we had no reason to go to Roger Corman because we had all the work done. So that was the way it stayed. And we always try to involve the director where we can and to have their stamp of approval and to get the film looking the way it should be. I mean, we're always careful to avoid any kind of revisionism on the part of directors, and can you just make this blue, and can you change this and change that? And we always tried to say it should look the way it did on its premiere, and you can't, you know, George Lucas it up. So that's our approach, and that's what we did on Pit Stop. And Jack was very happy. I mean, Jack had never really been invited into a lab to grade a film and to get it looking the way he did, and he was really surprised and really pleased in the end the way that it could end up looking so good, and the fact that he was really happy made us happy. So that's good.
That's awesome. Yeah, I thought it was great with having Sid Haig on there too, with the Drive Hard special feature with him talking about it. I thought that was really nice too. It's always fun to see Sid pop up and give his two cents on it.
It's really nice to see the evolution of his career between from Spider Baby into Pit Stop, and then obviously everyone knows where he went thereafter. So, and to see him in The Host, the special feature on Spider Baby, was really cool as well.
Yeah.
It's interesting with Pit Stop as an example, like even with two releases, how slightly different each print would be. Because you have these sites comparing each screenshot and everything, and for me that doesn't matter. It's how does it look as the movie's moving, as things are going, doesn't matter. But I bought both just to compare, but I haven't done it myself yet. But what I can't wait to watch that restoration demonstration that you guys put on as a special feature. Like that kind of stuff for me is really fun. Fun to watch on how these films are restored and everything, and you guys seem to do that quite a bit. Like you're doing that, you did that with Nightmare City to kind of show all the things you guys have gone through to restore that film. Is that something you're particularly interested in? Because I see these kinds of features a lot as far as the restoration demos and things like that. Is that something you go out of your way to kind of make sure you show, or is there a reason behind those, or does it just work out naturally?
I think It kind of works itself out naturally. I think if there's a story to tell, if there's something interesting to illustrate, then it makes sense if you're not going to end up with something that's ends up telling a really boring restoration story of, oh, we got this element and we did this to it. And that's not too interesting. Not many people are going to be interested in seeing that. But in the case of Nightmare City and Pit Stop, we had interesting things we could say about the process. So we did that. And it's really nice to see that a lot of people have enjoyed those videos, so it's something we'd like to do a little bit more of if we can, but our priority is always getting, you know, good interviews with cast and crew or historical experts. I mean, we wouldn't want to do a lot of navel-gazing about our own work, really.
right.
The priority is always make good releases.
Well, we'll leave that to Brad. Brad could just...
Yeah, I'll do that.
If you guys are ever feeling down, just give Brad a call.
One thing I did want to ask is, whenever you acquire anything, do you guys seek out the elements first of, like, is this something we can rescue? Are the elements there that we can use and then announce it? Or vice versa, do you, you know, acquire something and then do the search? Like, how does that process work for you?
We would never announce a title that we don't have a license or material in place for. It just opens us up to disappointing too many fans. I mean, if we were to go out and say, hey, we're looking for this title, but we don't have material, it just opens you up too much. And then you end up with people saying, hey, when's this coming? Are you ready yet? And we can't expect everybody to keep up with every latest bit of news. And it can kind of take the focus away from other things we're doing. So we'll always make sure that we've got things as near as ready to go when we announce a title. But your comment about rescuing films is really interesting, because that's something we're kind of facing at the moment with some films we've licensed where negatives don't exist or any preprint material. So we're having to go from 35mm prints. So it is a real rescue job, because 35mm prints grade very easily and discolor and everything. And there's only so much you can do with a print because it's already being color graded. So with a few titles coming up early next year, it's a real rescue, and that's going to be a bit of a theme next year. But it does mean we're going to have a really interesting slate of titles that potentially will be the last gasp for them. If the prints completely degrade and they become unusable, then if that a film is in that situation, it will never be on Blu-ray, because all that might exist is an old Digibeta, which is an SD format, and you can't make a Blu-ray out of an SD tape.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing, because that's what interests me the most, is because I've been collecting, you know, movies ever since I was little. You know, VHS is a huge thing for me, because a lot of films that are on VHS aren't on DVD or Blu-ray or any other format in any other country. So it's sad to see films disappear, because they have, you know, films disappear all the time. So, companies like yourselves and Vinegar Syndrome, for one, going out and rescuing films that, you know, because, I mean, the thing is that everybody, you know, you want to focus on any of the big titles, like, you know, for example, you guys are releasing Hellraiser. That's great. It's a big box set, super exciting, but everybody knows Hellraiser. So it's nice to know, with, you know, a team like yourselves going after something like Blood Rage, that a lot of people have not experienced Blood Rage. There was kind of a resurgence this past year or two, because it started going to theaters and they were showing prints at theaters. And I think that sparked a lot of interest from people. Now, is that something that you encountered because of the request, or was that something Blood Rage was a title on your screen for a while?
I'll fill that one, because I did the acquisition on Blood Rage. Blood Rage was, well, I'm a huge slasher fan myself, and I, like, over the last few kind of years, you know, I've seen all the, you know, been through all the Friday the 13th and then the My Bloody Valentine's and the Prowlers and Just Before Dawn's, and, you know, kind of gone through everything, really, and just kind of kept digging and wanted to find out more, and what, you know, what kind of, you know, that's all part of the joy of being kind of a horror fan, is you've never seen it all. And, you know, with a lot of these films, I just always find, you know, some are more successful than others at what they do, but I always find there's some redeeming quality that makes me kind of glad that I sought it out. I can pretty much find the redeeming quality in most of these films. And yeah, just kind of constantly digging, and Blood Rage was one that came up. And, so I just, probably about a couple of years ago now, set about, tracking down, the rights holder. And I, you know, I didn't have any idea of the process. I just sort of started, trying to reach out to the director. I think I contacted somebody who had interviewed him for a magazine. And sort of through the person who had interviewed him, I didn't get response, there. So then I tried to track down the producer, Marianne Cantor, which I did finally, and then she put me in touch with John Daly, who co-owns the film with her. But that whole process from then until now was about 2 years, really. And eventually they got in touch, and you know, they had amazingly, there was a negative, and it just all went from there.
Wow,
that's awesome. That sounds to me. Because I love kind of tracking things down and researching things, and that sounds to me like it'd be really fun. Is it thrilling for you to do stuff like that, or does it become tedious?
Yeah, of course. And I find it really exciting. You know, it's kind of like film archaeology,
right.
And when it all kind of converges and comes together, and there is something usable, and you do find out who has the rights. It's amazing. And, you know, the thing is, the reason I'm doing it is because I want to hold that Blu-ray in my hands. You know, I've always wanted to have it on Blu-ray. Same with the Mutilator. You know, I've been waiting for that release for, I don't know, 5-6 years. And
forever.
I finally found myself in a position where I could do something about it. And,
That's
amazingly,
awesome.
It's kind of, it's come off. And I was, same situation there. I was, I was aware that Buddy Cooper directed and produced it, so most likely owned the film. And I think I'd been trying to track him for about a year and a half. Again, getting in touch with somebody who had interviewed him and hounding them for his details. And finally got his details, sent him an email. And about 10 minutes later, I was checking my phone on the platform going home from work one evening. And there was an email from Buddy Cooper. And it was just, you know, I don't underestimate, you know, my heart skipped a beat. you know, it's like you're going back to what you're saying about, you know, like shaking at the idea of having these films in your hands. That's exactly the same for me. And that's why I, you know, do it, because I am a fan, and I'm doing it for the fan in me, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems harder with, you know, films like Blood Rage and The Mutilator, because those directors really, like, I think, the director of Mutilator, that's all he did. He did that movie and then that's it, right?
He went to LA for a bit, and I think he wrote a few scripts, had a couple of things optioned, but I mean, this is all something that you'll kind of you'll find out about in the extras for our release.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, the really interesting story there is that the whole film, and I actually went out there to film the extras a couple of months ago. It was my first trip to the US, went out to Carolina. And, cause I was just so close to the project, and I really just wanted to actually go and, you know, be where it was all filmed and meet the cast and crew. And Buddy got, you know, some of the actors over, and, some of the other crew were there. And the interesting thing there is that it was all, his family had a, or still has, a motel on the beach. And that was kind of the premise, really, for making the whole film, is that he had access to this location, somewhere where they could put up all the cast and crew at the same time. So it was kind of like a ready-made film set.
Wow.
Completely lost my train of thought there. But, yeah, so... where did we start with that?
I don't know. I kind of got just lost of you trying to find, you know, get the Mutilator together.
We're talking about other films.
Yeah,
so other films that he'd made. Yeah, so long story short is he went out to LA to sort of, doing scripts and things. But, you know, for personal reasons, he had to go back and take over the family motel, which is where he is now. And yeah, so it was really cool to go out there and, you know, see where it was shot. And but, you know, he's still so passionate about the film, and, you know, I haven't been in a situation before where, you know, he really drove the whole bringing the cast and crew together. He's still in touch with loads of the people. He Ed Ferrell, who served in multiple film, he like helped out with the effects. He was sort of a production manager as well. He still works at the motel with Buddy. So all these people from the production, it was a real family atmosphere, and it kind of has maintained to this day. So it was really, you know, it was really great to see that and see how dedicated Buddy is, particular still to his film. And, you know, he was really excited about the release, and it was really great to be there and kind of, you know, be a part of that.
That's awesome.
And we're not there yet, so it's still exciting.
Yeah.
Now, is there any talk about with some of your older releases that have been on DVD and some of your older releases that have been in the UK? Are you trying to obtain U.S. rights for those at all? I mean, obviously, a lot of the films that you've released are released over here, but certain ones have not. Also, I'm sure you guys get into the problem with Lionsgate owning a lot of this shit, too. Are you guys trying to go back on your catalog and finding out if they can release or the rights are up for the company that released it over here at all? Is that something you guys are searching for?
We're looking at a few opportunities. We're really passionate about all our titles, so anything that we can bring over and share with the US, we definitely like to do. There's nothing coming up immediately, but it's definitely a going concern to try and make those available to people. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys get asked this all the time, but it's one of my favorite releases this year. That Blood and Black Lace, I know that it's region A and B, you can order from the UK. Was that a problem with somebody owning the US rights? Or is there any hope on the horizon for that to... I mean, we don't
know yet. I mean, it's a broader legal problem with various parties concerned, and we're still trying to work it out. So there's not much I can say beyond that, really, but fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Because it's a great movie, and I don't know if I've talked about it on the show or not. I talked about it on the last show, didn't I, Brad, or no? We're just focusing
on... You talk about it a lot.
Well, it's a fantastic film.
Yeah, and, no, it's a great film.
And the more obtainable it is, I think everyone will be better off for it. But at least, you know, Amazon, we can order directly from you guys, correct? From your guys' website? Boom. So if you haven't bought it yet, if you're waiting for the U.S. release, just get the U.K. release, everybody. It's worth it. But those types of situations always intrigue me, you know, things like that pop up, these crazy, you know, intricate legal things that could have, you know, just pop up out of nowhere. Has anything else like that popped up within the past few years, or was this kind of a special kind of situation in this? I know you probably can't talk a whole lot about it, but I mean, has anything like this happened before?
Nothing really springs to mind. I mean, sometimes these things happen and generally they're worked out.
Right.
Obviously this one wasn't. We, as I said earlier, you know, it's not just material and rights that we try and completely pin down before release, but also, you know, the legal aspect, which is part of the rights issue. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's always very carefully looked at. And, we just don't want to disappoint people essentially. So we're always careful. Blood and Black Lace was just a bit of a surprise really.
Yeah. Now, is there, depending on how well the movies, because a few things you've released just on DVD over in the UK, not the US, because you haven't released any DVDs over here, but is there any talk about putting those on Blu-ray now, depending on how well they do, or do you put them on DVD for maybe a reason because of the, you know, maybe the film elements aspect or anything like that? Because, I mean, mainly, I'll just get to the point. Can we have Slaughter High on Blu-ray soon?
Well, generally, if we release something on DVD, it means that we don't have HD material. As to whether or not we're targeting any specific DVD-only releases, not really right now. Slaughter High, yeah, I think might be Lionsgate. I'm not too sure. It's not something that we've really looked into just yet because of the Lionsgate issue.
Right.
Generally, Lionsgate don't really sub-license in the US, so that's kind of a big stumbling block. And also, Lionsgate don't really let other people restore their material. so we're kind of limited to that with a lot of studios. So yeah, I mean, it's a big minefield to navigate, and that really dictates a lot of whether we can go chase things or not, and that kind of informs how we look at films. I mean, I know we get a lot of people saying, can you release this, can you release that, and if it's Warner or Sony, it's at least it makes it very easy for us to say, well, no, because they don't sublicense. Mm-hmm. So it's not to say that we're not trying, it's just that, you know, some studios are easier to deal with than others.
Now, even though you get turned down a lot, do you still attempt it? Because, I mean, you, like you said, Warner and Sony say no. Do you still, like, if a title comes up or something that pops in your head, do you still try and get the, even though you're not going to know what the response is, or do you just let it go?
No, we always try.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, because one day, you know, someone's got to break through one day, so why not be us?
Right.
So, yeah, we're always trying. We're always keeping discussions going with as many people as possible. I mean, the Yakuza papers is a good example. I started talking to them about those after Battle Royale, so that took like 5 years to do. But if you don't give up, eventually you get your way. So there's still hope for other things.
So you guys, I don't have anything to say about that, because that's amazing, pretty much. I don't know if there's too many words for that. So,
we gotta start wrapping up here soon, Brad, because I have to start getting ready for work. Wah, wah.
Yeah, same here.
But I did want to ask one last thing here, and we can wrap it up from here. But you guys are released Necromantic, and then you have Necromantic 2 on slate for November, and these are released over here in the U.S. by Cold Epics, and we've actually had the opportunity to talk to Jorg about the films, which was really fantastic. But are these the first home releases in the UK? Because these were on the Video Nasties, correct?
No, they weren't on the Video Nasties list. They weren't actually. They weren't ever submitted. Video Recordings Act, which created the Video Nasties list, was in 1984. So by the time Necromantic came around, which was 1987, I think people just thought no chance in hell of getting this past the Board of Film censors back then, or it changed to classification. Yeah. So no, this is the first time they've ever been submitted. And yeah, we just got Necromantic 2 past Uncut a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. For me, that seems kind of a big deal that these are getting releases, especially in the UK, because kind of that hit. Was it released there on VHS and stuff, or
it's never been available on home video in the UK. So yeah, it's when the first one had been passed. I mean, I spent a few sleepless nights over this, to be honest, about Necromantic 2. Would it, you know, also pass Uncut? But I think once the first one had been passed, you kind of knew the second one would probably be all right. It's, you know, it's a bit, I think it's kind of to its benefit. It's kind of told from a sort of feminist perspective. And I think that maybe helps in a way. I don't know. I mean, I think the corpse is obviously a lot more convincing and gooey and icky. And so I wasn't sure maybe that would stand against it. From purely you know, being a bit more realistic, but once these things have been passed, you know, because for me, Necromantic, you know, I had to get the US DVD off eBay. Was it Amazon? Maybe you weren't allowed to sell it on eBay at the time, but like 2-3 years ago, and I remember watching it sort of 2 a.m, bleary eyed in front of the TV screen, and it really felt like really illicit and grimy, which it is, but you know, it felt like absolute contraband. And now that it has been passed, you look at it and kind of think, yeah, I mean, why, you know, this, it's, you know, why wouldn't, you know, why can't a kind of a responsible adult be permitted to watch this? You know, I mean, it kind of changes your perception of these things once it's been passed.
Yeah.
And same with number 2, you know, I mean, it's just a movie, as people would say, you know.
Yeah, well, these especially, I mean, I have the Cult Epics ones, but I'm eyeing these ones. I mean, I know they're region B locked, but just what we've been saying about how you guys...
Oh, the soundtrack included,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, go the extra mile. It's, I mean, super with packed. The artwork and the packaging, the limited edition packaging especially, you know, I have my eye on this. I may have to pick this up. And is there any... the first one is still available. Is that still available with that limited edition, or did that sell out?
Sold out.
Damn it.
Sold out. 3,000 units, yeah.
Damn it.
That's something to say when you guys sell
off the pre-order.
Yes. So, well, like I said.
But you, in the Amore edition we released still has all the same extras, and just not the soundtrack and the booklet.
Gotcha. But like I said, like the way you guys went above and beyond for these two titles especially is just kind of shows, you know, where you guys' hearts are as far as these genre films and people who would love to own these and make these parts of their collection. I mean, because that's what it's all about for us. That's kind of us collector nerds. You know, we like to have the movie, but also, you know, we want to have something we can display proudly on our shelf as well. And I think you guys do a great balancing act with all of your titles. And, you know, people have their Arrow films sections, you know, along with the Criterion sections.
Got mine.
and I think there's something to be said about that when your distribution company earns and deserves a section on somebody's shelf. So we're really... excited to have you guys on the show. We're, you know, thankful for you guys to take some time out of your day to talk to us. Brad, did you have anything else for these guys before we...
Well, since they said they listen to their fans and they listen to requests, I have one request. One request only is Raiders of Atlantis. That's it.
It's not something we're looking at right now, but request duly noted.
Cool.
We shall look into it.
I have your emails now. I might
sell it in three words, and we'll give us three words to sell it.
Three words to sell it.
Yeah. Go.
Raiders of Atlantis. I mean, it's in the title itself.
Wow. Snap, my friend.
Brad will be submitting a full pitch for his ideas, some marketing ideas, I believe, as well, packaging ideas.
Oh, it's just the cover art alone.
And Diodato.
Yeah, I mean, Diodato, I mean, just sadly, the lead guy isn't alive anymore, so that kind of sucks. I always forget his name off the top of my head, but no, it's always a film that I'm always after. We have it on DVD over here. You're on some huge box set that Mill Creek put out, but it's one of my, I mean, you guys released Slaughter High, which was a lot better than the Lionsgate DVD that we got over here. And the other one was Class 1999, but that's a Lionsgate title. So, but anyways,
Brad mentions Raiders of Atlantis on every show.
We should add that we have a suggestions email at arrowfilms.co.uk, and we all receive those, so
free to abuse it.
Yeah, use and abuse away. We get suggestions, you know, every day, and you know, we all personally look at them and, you know, take them into account. So, you know, that's another way that we're kind of, you know, take direct feedback from the fans.
Awesome. Well, you got two fans especially right here. If we had all the money in the world, we'd buy every single title ever made from you guys. I'm working on it. I got some things in the works. Hopefully once I get there, I'll be able to buy a whole bunch more. But
we'll do our best to make it bankrupt.
Well, that Hellraiser set's about to pull the trigger on the pre-order for that.
Yeah,
do it.
Because those are brand new transfers, and that was like, oh shit. New transfer for those. Brad's not a Hellraiser fan, but I am, and that box set looks sexy. All right, guys, did you have anything else, anything you wanted to add, gentlemen, before we depart?
I've just got one comment.
Sure.
It's not cranberry sauce. That's it. Nice. That's it. Sorry. That's all I got.
There you go. Fantastic.
Way. Thanks very much, gentlemen. Thanks for having us.
All right, guys. Thanks again for being on the show. Like I said, we preach the gospel of Arrow Films every chance we can get. So we'll continue to do so. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having us, guys. Thank you.
All right, gentlemen.
Yeah, bye. Thanks.
All right, let's jump into our segments here. First up, we have, hold on, this always gets messed up in my head.
Scream.
I always want to say scream streams. Stream screams.
Nate, wake up!
There's something very important I forgot to tell you.
Don't fucking scream at me!
Scream, I'll bring you back. Don't scream, miss... Don't scream! Are you ready for stream screams?
Oh my god.
Who invited Dr. Claw?
That's right, I do sound like that shit. I never thought about that. Oh shit, I got a new voice.
Stream Screams is basically a list that Brad has curated for the next... Gosh, 20 shows. He has mined the depths.
Fitty shows. Fish. I got Fitty now.
Man, he has mined the depths of the voodoo.
And, Screamer's going to be on there soon.
Digital entertainment to find things that aren't necessarily out easy to find on DVD or Blu-ray, have been relegated to VHS or out of print or/slash bootleg.
All of the above.
Today we are talking about 1996's The Dentist, directed by Brian Usna.
Hi there. Is this your first trip to the dentist? You a little scared? No? Good. Give me five.
Dr. Alan Finestone's a renowned dentist who's got it all.
The anniversary.
A beautiful wife, a thriving practice, and an impeccable reputation.
I know I'm early.
Couldn't wait, huh?
No more braces, thank God.
Builds up quite a practice, doctor.
Kay is always busy, so we're always busy.
But behind the success is a man who's feeling the pressure.
The IRS?
You got real tax problems.
When I tell you to do something, you do it!
You're short-staffed as it is.
Do you dress like that in front of the pool, man?
Would you like to make another appointment?
I had an appointment!
You're not wearing anything.
Now, Dr. Finestone's gone over the edge.
This is my wife!
Please, please.
Tonight you pay for all that you've done to me.
Maybe we should close up until things are under control.
Things are under control! Everything is under control!
What we've got here is a seriously derailed train. The man over the edge.
Open wide.
Somebody help me!
It's high!
The Dentist.
There now. Better?
The Dentist!
Yes.
This was written by Stuart Gordon, had his hand in the writing, which is pretty fantastic. And this was my first time watching it.
Really?
And it's been 6 months. Time for your checkup, Sean.
And this movie surprised me. It surprised me. I loved it. It was weird. It was gory. It had a really great tone to it. The dentist. I mean, I hate the dentist already. Ugh. The dentist is one of the. I always hate.
But you have such nice teeth.
Yeah, but I hate the dentist.
Okay.
And the sound of the drill and everything, and this movie, like those scenes, really kind of unnerved me, and I liked that I was feeling unnerved during those scenes, because that's when you know a movie's working, you know, when you kind of get the weird comedy and the weirdness of the film, and there are still things that can kind of pucker your ass cheeks a little bit. That's when the movie's working. So I loved the film. I liked that it wasn't a straightforward slasher type film. I think it shows that if the right creativity is there, you can really take an idea that, you know, another director or writer would kind of just turn into a slasher or something simple. But they really dive into a lot of psychological. This guy's having a psychological meltdown, and they really dive into that. I thought it was great, and I think people should definitely check this one out.
Good.
The first time
I saw
rude.
I'm just saying, because Sean was just like, okay, I said it all. Fuck you guys.
I did. That was my take on it. Now you guys go.
Oh, the first time I saw The Dentist, it's actually kind of a weird arrangement. So there used to be like a mom-pa video store within walking distance of where I grew up, and they always had like all the weird horror. And the box cover for the sequel for The Dentist 2, Brace Yourself,
it's fucking terrifying.
It gave me nightmares for years. Just for those who have not seen it, it's like a woman and it's very pale, and she's got like her mouth wide open, but instead of having teeth, she has like nails for teeth.
Razor blades.
That's okay, razor blades.
And they're like stuck
in
the fucking gums.
It's and it's so
fucking gross.
Horrifying. Like, thinking about it gives me, like, it makes me want to die.
The willies!
So, it gives me the willies. So, I avoided The Dentist movies like the fucking plague. I was like, nope, uh-uh. Like, that shit, I'm not okay with. Like, mm-mm. And then when I was in college, I was house-sitting, and for whatever reason, The Dentist was on, like, at HBO or something. I don't fucking know. And I was like, all right. I'm a big kid now. I'm in college. I can do this. And I watched The Dentist. I was like, God, this movie is sadistic as hell. Like, it is so dark and mean. Like, that's what it is. It's a mean movie.
Yeah, it's
not
really
just,
mean.
Yeah, it's not just, like, gory for the sake of being gory or whatever. Like, it's just fucking mean.
Well, this guy's, like, suffering a psychotic break. Like,
he's losing it. But it's not crazy. But it's not like an American Psycho break.
Right.
It's like... This is the guy that ends up on CNN and Nancy Grace is trying to analyze him. Like, this guy has lost his shit. And I don't know why we don't do movies like that anymore, because I think it's great. Like, it's a great character study. I love watching somebody just kind of lose it. But, like, he loses it and it's not just like, oh, now I'm on a kill spree. Like, it's actually interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the movie, and I'm mad at myself that it took me so long to watch it.
Yeah, it was one of those films. It came out, I call it the Trimark era, because all these fucking direct-to-video movies came out through Trimark, and they sat on the shelves at Blockbuster, and a lot of them were really cheap, but, you know, a lot of people put down the 90s for 90s horror, because they always think of the mainstream movies. Well, the 90s horror films, where it was the direct-to-video movies. That's where the good shit laid. And this was one of them. You know, it was one of those things that showed up on the, you know, because I remember seeing it on the shelf and I'm like, oh, what the fuck is this shit? The Dentist? Like, what is this? You know, like every profession, the lawyer, the doctor, blah, blah, blah. You know, so it's just a corny title. But upon watching it, even as a young kid, you know, it's funny because we just talked about Parents. It's another one of those movies that feels like a dreamlike sequence through the whole entire film.
Yeah.
You know, where it's all glossy, like almost like soap opera-ish. And
it's got that Vaseline filter.
Yeah, and it's fun because I think you're seeing the world unfold, kind of maybe how Alan is, who's the dentist, who's played by Corbin Burnson, who, you know, is obviously having these delusional fantasies and alternate reality almost in a way, just really, he's all really fucked up. You know, things are happening that's actually not happening to him. And then he like, you know, just imagines everything. And I think looking at the film with the cinematography being that kind of glossy look, I think you're living it with him as well,
mm-hmm.
which I think is kind of, you know, I don't know if that's intentional. I mean, Brian Usna has that kind of, you know, cheaper cheaper look on reality, because, I mean, you just look at his films, like, you know, Society and Return of Living Dead 3, Silent Night, Deadly Night 4, even that, like, he has this weird look on the world, mm-hmm. and it's, I don't know if it's, you know, choice of, you know, cinematography and, you know, the camera, or if it's all intentional to kind of get that feel for the film. And I think that really works. And it's also really, really fun watching Corbin Burnson in this film, because now he's like a hardcore Christian.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he does like all Christian films. Like, he had a movie just out called Christian Mingle with like Lacey Chabert or something.
Oh, my God.
So, like, he's a hardcore, like, you know, producer, like, now with these films. And all I can picture is whenever that one sequence when he's having that dreamlike state of when his wife is giving the pool guy a blowjob, and then he shoves her head down on his dick.
Oh, that scene.
And then
ridiculous.
She's just saying, "Show him your teeth, you fucking cunt. Show him your teeth." And it's like, "You're a Christian. What are you doing?" Sorry if that offends anybody, but I think it's
Christians
fucking hilarious.
Can be freaks too.
Well, it just shows that it is. But I just think
ask for forgiveness.
You know, because anytime he pops up, like, you know, if I'm walking the shelves at Best Buy or looking through something on Amazon, I see his face on some Christian film. I'm like, that's a fucking dentist. You know. So, this is, like I said, there's a Trimark Films that was bought up by Lionsgate. Another Lionsgate title we're covering. Which is, was it $5.99 or $6.99 on Vudu?
Yeah, I think it was pretty cheap. $6.99. I bought it. You know?
It looks okay. This is one of the ones that looks okay. You can pretty much tell at the beginning of the film because it's white credits on black black background, mm-hmm. and the black is pixelated. So that's when you can tell that the transfer isn't that great. Once the movie starts, though, it doesn't look that bad. Again, I think they're using prints for this because there's so many scratches and cigarette burns in this movie. It actually feels right watching something like this. And also the Trimark title pops up in the beginning, which is a lot of fun. Yeah. Brings back memories of me when I was, like, you know, 15, going to the video store, renting this type of shit. So, you know, it is another thing. It has, you know, a decent cast. Ken Foray's in it. And also an appearance by Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, I know, man.
Which is hilarious.
Young Mark Ruffalo, you know? Is great.
And also has a soundtrack by Alan Haworth, which if a lot of people don't know. Everybody credits John Carpenter as amazing. John Carpenter is amazing. Fact, he is, but so is Alan Haworth. He is kind of the right-hand man with John Carpenter, and he did the score for this movie, which
Earl,
is...
But... Go for it.
Sorry. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, Earl Bowen shows up. You guys would know him from Terminator 2.
Oh, yeah.
Psychologist guy. He's kind of the skeezy psychologist guy.
Yeah. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, he's great seeing him show up.
But, I think Brian Usna, this is his, you know, definitely he's already kind of been into the world. He debuted with Society, which we talked about on the show. He's a lot of weird movies, and I think this is where he really hit with this and the sequel, and then what we talked – actually, we mentioned the film in passing on the last episode when we were talking about the Kindred, is that he directed that movie – what is it? The Baby in the Bottle.
Prophecy.
No, not Prophecy. That's the alien in the egg. Baby in a Bottle. What is it called?
Yeah. Progeny. Progeny.
Progeny. That's it. I can never remember that word. Yeah, that's the problem.
Yep.
But you know, he did these three movies like almost back to back, and I think it's a unique little filmography that he has in its entirety, but also with these three movies. Dentist 2 is not as great as The Dentist, but it definitely has its moments. It's written by Stuart Gordon again. It stars the same people. Clint Howard's in it. Directed by Brian Usna. So it follows suit with the first one for sure, but it's definitely a movie to see. And if you're anything scared of The Dentist, this will kind of terrify you.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when he's doing the kid's teeth. Oh my god.
That scene, man. Oh my god.
Because number one, it's terrifying because he's imagining the kid's mouth is dirty. And then in reality, he's just being really rough. And I remember going to the dentist, and the dentist, like, really, you know, like the hygienist even going through, and it was just, it was painful. And this is like a whole new level because you're having this dentist who's having this mental breakdown that's just absolutely going apeshit, that's trying to do his job at the same time, but it's interfering with his work, which is funny to me. And also another aspect that dentists – I don't know how recent that study was or if they've ever revisited, is that dentists is the highest suicide rate of jobs.
Really?
Yeah. I know that's been said for a while. I don't know when that was actually, you know, calculated and, you know, those stats were pulled. But it's always something I've always that I've heard for many, many years. I don't know if it has changed, but dentists always had the highest suicide rate. Which I thought was funny for this movie, even though the movie is based kind of on a real-life dentist serial killer, which I don't know if you guys know that. It's based on a
– Yeah.
Yeah, he was a hitman or something like that. Very, very loose, but that's kind of, I guess, where they got the idea from. And also, I don't know if that study was done in 96 with dentists being the highest suicide rate. I don't think it was. But retrospect thinking about it, it's a lot of fun knowing that, watching this movie then, or even knowing that, just watching kind of the mental breakdown. Not that anybody should have a mental breakdown. It's always sad if it happens.
Do you guys want to hear the top 11 professions with the highest suicide rate?
Yeah.
Yes.
We got medical doctors, number one. Dentists, number two.
Okay, so it moved. Good.
And police officers, veterinarians, financial services, real estate agents. Oh, shit. My wife's real estate agent. Electricians, lawyers, farmers, pharmacists, and chemists.
So high pressure jobs.
But, yes.
Color me shocked.
You should take Noah to the dentist.
He's been to the dentist.
But Corbin Burnson's dentist.
No. Yeah, but now he's like super Jesus, so he'd just be like, just pray and your plaque will go away.
Pray the plaque away.
Pray the plaque away. I need a button that says that. Oh God.
Pray the plaque away.
I God. Wonder, like, and this
if
is
there's any Christian dentist that has that, because that should this be is, hilarious.
This is just because this is how my brain works. I feel like because of that stupid dentist who killed the lion, like, I'm sure somebody's probably clamoring trying to remake The Dentist right now as we speak. Like, someone's like, that shit was trending on Twitter last week. Time to remake Brian Usen as The Dentist.
Oh, because didn't they make that Bill Cosby rapist movie? Oh, didn't you guys tweet that or something?
I did. Oh my God. I've never been so pissed about something.
Yeah, how quick can you actually move to make a fucking movie?
It's Bill Huxtable, Serial Rapist, is what it's called.
That's awful.
Yeah, and I watched the trailer, and I was like, all right, like, I'm done.
Wait, there's already a trailer?
Oh, you can watch the movie if you want. It's on Vimeo. You can buy it for, like, $4.
Wow.
But I won't give those... Exactly, I won't give those assholes money.
Actually, I would... This is something I would pirate people.
See, but then, like, the thing that makes me mad about it is that they made this other, like, super low-budget film called Blood Marsh Raccoon, which is actually really funny and, like, kind of clever and a good commentary on, like, white trash America. So then when they made this, I was like, God damn it, that was a fluke. You guys suck. But that has nothing to do with The Dentist.
All right. Moving along.
Wait, just one thing. I just want to talk about Brian Usna for a second for his use of cinematography. How amazing is the sequence with the Italian theme opera room
when
he invites
his
wife in?
Yes.
Like, that sequence, like, you're not wanting her to die, but at the same time, you're just like, holy shit, this is so fucking cool.
That room is just a great job. It's like set design and everything on that room is great.
For people that don't know, all the rooms in the dentist office have themes. Like, there's a heaven theme, which is kind of funny as well, because Corbin Burnson. But, I just thought it was just a really, really great sequence. But it's definitely something to pick up. I know it's probably been looked over numerous times just because of the cover art. And being it's called The Dentist, it just seems really cheap. But all in all, it's definitely, you know, just a really fun movie. Bryan Usna is a great director. You know, if you're a fan of, you know, Return of the Living Dead 3 or Society or anything like that, Bride of the Reanimator, of course, he's kind of a prolific filmmaker in my eyes. Like, he really knows how to show a really gritty side of society. Kind of funny. But, yeah.
Nice pun.
Well, I didn't mean that, but it's the truth. The public eye.
Nice. But
anyways, there you go.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I dug it, man. I'm super happy with that recommendation. Because, I've always...
3 for 3.
Dude, you're doing awesome. I was always... would always bypass that, because I've seen that cover for years, and I was just going to be some dumb thing. I'll find it on Netflix or something sometime when I've had too much to drink and watch it. But it's not that kind of movie. There's so much more... Just like Parents, yeah. Like, there's so much more under the surface. It's a great horror film, for sure.
Yeah, so when your little companies are re-releasing movies or releasing Escape from New York and fucking, you know, Return of the Living Dead, I'm sitting here sighing because they look over shit like this.
Yep. Well, it's under the Lionsgate.
Right, but even Lionsgate isn't releasing this shit, you know?
Yeah, totally. It's ridiculous.
They have so many, that's what I'm saying. They have so many good, like, whenever I say Lionsgate has a lot of great movies, this is the shit.
They have a lot of great movies, and it's just frustrating because I feel like they're just going to sit there and rot.
Well, Vudu, $5.99, 1080p, I guess.
Worth it.
1080p-ish.
Yeah. We'll just say 720 for measure.
Yeah. I mean, I was watching it in 1080p, and then all of a sudden my kids started watching YouTube or whatever, and my internet started goofing around, so I had to go down to standard quality or whatever, and it still looked
standard
okay.
Def.
But it looked
standard def. Like a peasant.
Standard that def. SD.
But it did. It looked all right in 1080p, man. It looked okay.
Yeah, no, it's
definitely tell a difference.
It's a huge upgrade from the DVD because the DVD is shit. Which is, I think, Trimark. I don't even think Lionsgate re-released it when it came out. But yeah, this is definitely the best version that you can find as of right now. And that's the reason why we're doing this segment, of course, is because these are the best versions of these films for even cheaper than the DVD price that you can buy for, you know, HD. Not to rent, by the way. This is to buy on HDX. Can we talk about HDX for a second? Like, what's the big difference between HD and HDX? Because they're both the same price.
HD is $720, I think, right?
Oh,
and HDX.
I'm
is
useless at this. I have no idea what the difference
but
is.
Really,
I just
like,
buy what's cheaper usually.
It's inconsequential, and I just always buy the HDX because you can watch it in whatever.
It's the same price, and you can always downgrade on whenever, because if you buy HDX, you buy all three.
Yeah, and it's usually like $1 difference. So just buy the HDX. Done. I don't know why they just... I think they want to show people that there's three different... like, because they don't pass over the movie, I guess.
But it's the same price as the HD version. That's the problem I don't understand. That's what I don't get.
Who knows? For a while, they were doing three different prices, but I think they've kind of wised up.
Oh, good. Idiots.
I always just buy HDX and move on.
I'm kidding. I actually really love Vudu, thanks to Brian Sauer for turning me on to this shit. Because if it wasn't, like, seriously, if it wasn't for Brian Sauer, we wouldn't be having this segment. Because Brian didn't tell me about these movies, but he was so going apeshit about Vudu. I was like, all right, let me look. And he was, like, tweeting a couple things, like, hey, man, like, and you think, like, Caddyshack 2 or something was one of the ones he sent me. I was like, oh, that's not on Blu-ray. And then I was, like, looking, and I just started searching endlessly through their library, and I'm like creaming in my pants, spending like, you know, $500 one night on Vudu.
What I did once, because he was doing it too, I found all my, I grabbed every single one of my DVDs. I'm going by section. I still got to get the horror, but I started with comedies and things that I haven't upgraded or didn't, there's not even Blu-rays. And about half of my DVDs, and I got a stack now, I'm just going to unload them because I haven't watched them in years. But half of them had digital upgrades. So for like $2 a movie, I upgraded them, and once you put in like 10 movies, it drops it down to $1 a movie.
Wait, what?
So for like $25, I upgraded 25 movies.
Wait,
get out of here.
Quality.
Whoa, how are you doing that? I don't know about this.
They have an app. If you go to Vudu.com, it says upgrade DVDs, and you can also do this for Blu-ray. If a Blu-ray never came with a digital copy, you can buy a digital copy for like $2.
Whoa. Whoa. Back up. Uh-huh. So you're saying
that... blew his mind.
So you're just saying I can grab all my DVDs and then do I send them to Voodoo?
No, you put it in your DVD drive on your computer. It reads it and goes, oh, yeah, we have an HD digital copy for that. Do you want to upgrade or do you want to buy it? Yes.
Whoa, whoa. So I don't have to buy anything from Voodoo. I just put my DVD in my computer.
You will. It's an app you download. It's an app,
I download from what?
From Voodoo.com.
On my phone?
No, it has to be a computer because you have to put the disc into a drive.
You can't put a disc in. Yeah, you can't put your disc in your phone.
All right, you gotta tell me how to do this. Where do I go?
Well,
I know I want to find
this
out
right now. Are we doing this?
Yeah,
because right
the show, for the show, people want to know.
Okay, you go to voodoo.com, and if you have an account, and it always works if you link up.
Do I have an account?
And
what
it always works.
Nuts?
I'm talking to our listeners here. It always works. If you have
DVDs, okay.
Convert
DVDs.
Yeah, my computer's acting slow. I can't even get anywhere. But you click convert DVDs, and it'll walk you through steps on a thing to download and everything. And once you download that app, you bring it up. You sign into your Voodoo account. You put your DVD or Blu-ray. You have to have a Blu-ray drive if you want to do Blu-ray into your drive. It will read it, and it'll look and see if it has any HD. Digital copies, and if it does, it'll say, hey, we have a standard definition or an HD version. Do you want to buy the upgrade to HD digital copy for $2? And you put them all in your basket, all the movies. Once you hit 10, it does 50% on all your movies. So, you know, you'll be up to, like, you have 10 movies,
dude,
up to $20.
I want 10, to thank you so much, because I literally, like, I'm so glad you said this, because I literally have, like, 500 DVDs that I'm like set aside, not really that many, that I was just gonna convert, but I was just gonna buy them.
No,
so,
yeah, you get a discounted rate.
So instead of spending $13.99, I get it for $2 or
yes.
half or what?
Yeah, $2 if you do 10 or more, you get down to like $1 each or $1.50 each.
All
right,
you're
not gonna
show.
Sleep now.
We
got to
end the show right
hours.
Now. End the show right now.
It is worth it. I upgraded a whole bunch of comedies. I mean, I have like
I could have saved
and
money
ice,
on the dentist.
I have Ice Pirates. I have Ice Pirates in HD now.
By the fucking dentist.
I paid like $1 for it, $2 for it. But
it's
worth it. They don't take every single one. If it's Lionsgate, most of the time you'll find their stuff. It's there's certain studios that, like Warner Brothers, none of the Warner Brothers are available. But it's there a
well,
lot
of course
them,
not.
So
Sean, do you want to go to the dentist with Grandma?
All right, let's move on. To our next
come
movie.
Come on, Sean, come to the dentist
basically
with
because
Grandma.
The 3-year old in the room with me is getting super. Antsy.
Noah, come with Gam Gam to come get your teeth cleaned.
He's touching everything. You want a fruit snack? He wants a fruit snack.
Give him a fruit.
Noah and I have it in common because I am eating
fruit
snacks.
Hold on, buddy.
Gam Gam wants him to have a fridge pop.
I'm
going to
get
any ring pops in there, Sean?
I'm going to get the kid a fruit snack. Hold on 1 second, okay?
The key.
Well, we are at last. Right where we ought to be. Video.
Oh my god!
Okay.
Yeah, what Noah said.
That is a panic laugh. Can he hear us or do you have headphones? I never know.
No, he just sees me talking to my computer. He must think that daddy's just going crazy.
Well,
oh, wow.
I want to be like a mysterious voice from the box one day and just mess with him.
Yeah.
Right. Noah.
When we're done, I'll see if we'll talk to you guys.
Noah.
All right.
You laugh. He can hear me.
All right.
What if he can't hear us? We shouldn't say anything
bad.
He
might hear a little bit from the headphones. Possibly.
You can't say anything bad, Sean.
I can't. No. All right. Today's flick.
Today,
Junior. Basically, these are Brad recommendation sec. The second half of the podcast is just Brad recommends, basically. This is a Swedish film from 1985. Heavy metal horror, baby. Called
comma.
Blood Tracks.
Comma is essential in that sentence.
Heavy metal. Heavy Heavy metal horror.
Tell Noah to say heavy metal horror.
Noah, say heavy metal horror.
Mario.
Noah, say heavy metal horror.
That's how I felt after watching Blood Tracks. Brad, what's your review on Blood Tracks?
Maya.
We're here to shoot one scene for a rock video that's going to be published with Solid Gold's next album.
A young and beautiful rock group on location. Then the terror struck.
Shit! I'm not receiving you.
Please, Karen.
Trapped by a family of maniacs. The fire will burn to the final attack. Never-ending terror.
What the hell's happening here?
I don't know. I think everybody else is dead. No! This is a nightmare. Listen to me, pal. There's animals down there in the factory. Now, I don't know how many of them there are.
I read you, John.
Listen, I want you up here now with guns.
But please stop this. End this killer.
Who are you? What's going on? Why are you doing this?
Who are these maniacs?
I have Sonny!
Why?
Naomi Kaneda, Michael Fitzpatrick.
Just get us the hell out of here!
And Jeff Harding, Blood Tracks.
This is directed by Mats Helge,
who's known as Mike Jackson. So I have a very, very Mike funny Jackson. Story about this.
All right, Brad, go for us since this was your recommendation. How did this become one of your recommendations for this segment?
I've mentioned this on the show before, is that when I was younger, like 95, 96, with the computer we had, came with a bunch of discs, like games and shit like that. Well, All Movie Guide 2 was one of the things I had, and it had a shit ton of horror films. So I was going through, and then I came across Blood Tracks, and I remember it saying, you know, people making a rock music video, and people are there attacked by a murderous family living in the hills in this compound bullshit, directed by none other than Michael Jackson. that's what it said on All Movie Guide. So for a long time, Michael Jackson directed this movie for me. And I was telling everybody that Michael Jackson directed a horror film. And then when I came to my senses, you know, like yesterday, I realized this is wrong. And Michael Jackson did not direct Blood Tracks. It was some Swedish dude. So
that's amazing.
But
you're such an idiot. I love it.
For a long time, I thought Michael Jackson directed this movie. And I say a long time, I meant, you know, when I was like 12 to like 25.
That's a long time to be.
That's a joke.
Wrong.
No.
I
know. Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying.
Oh my god, it's so cute. I can't.
Your kid,
it.
When he laughs, it sounds like Cage from Pet Sematary, which is really scary.
Oh man, great. Thank you for that.
Just don't hit him with a truck and then daddy? Bury him.
Do you want to play, Daddy? Daddy, what the play?
Segment derailed by a 3-year-old.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Because Blood Tracks wasn't that great.
Yeah. Blood Tracks. Oh my god. Noah, I'm talking. Doesn't he know? Blood Tracks is basically The Hills Have Eyes. Well, let me put this. It's a less exciting Hills Have Eyes in the snow. But the music is, yeah, the music is amazing in this movie, even though they only play one song. But I think they play two. They play two songs. But Blood Tracks, the main thing, is just fucking insanely good. Which the band is Easy Action. In the movie, they're Solid Gold, right?
Yeah, Solid Gold.
Yeah, which is, like, the best name for a rock band. Also the name of the club that Billy Brown... Or not Billy Brown. Is it Billy Brown? No. Who plays in Buffalo 66? The guy who owns the strip club is called Solid Gold. But anyways, sidetracked. That happens really easy with me, by the way.
No.
So, anyways, Blood Tracks, it is, like, it literally is the same plot of The Hills Have Eyes, just in the snow with rock music.
Yeah.
So what'd you guys think of Blood Tracks? It's not available. Now, you did text me about the availability on DVD. What was the name of the Desert Film something?
Something like that, man. It's really shady sounding company.
That company, there's a few companies out there in the U.S. that are labels, quote-unquote, that have hard, like, whenever it's any site says, we specialize in rare and hard to find DVDs, that means they have tapes that they've transferred on their computer and put on a disc.
Yes.
Like, if they're not a real company. Desert Films, whatever, is not a legit Blu-ray.
It means they're gonna show up at a convention at a table and sell everything with the title written in Sharpie on the disc.
Yeah, so, yes, Blood Tracks is available on another format in the U.S. if you spend $12.99 on a DVD-R or whatever the fuck they're printed on. But I think the only legit copy that exists is a Swedish DVD of Blood Tracks, and it's not actually not that old. I think it just came out, like, last year.
Okay.
But, yeah, this is a VHS.
VHS rip.
Yeah, this is a VHS only, pretty much. It's been passed around. It does have kind of a cult following just because it is kind of really cheesy and corny. And every line in the film is terribly delivered.
Oh, yeah.
It's all dubbed, isn't
it? Half of it's dubbed, yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's a lot of fun.
I don't know how I had missed this film because I am a huge lover of unnecessary hair metal in every sense of the word. So I have no clue how this just, like, flew under my radar. Granted, I'm also 12, but, like, how the hell did I miss it? Because I was just watching it. I was like, this is fucking ridiculous. Like, it really is The Hills Have Eyes, but snow. But then, like, why the hair metal band? Like, of all the things...
Because it's a Swedish writer and director. I mean, come on. Hair metal is
so
like the thing.
Perfect.
It's great.
It's amazing. And like when they're shooting the video and like these guys are trying so hard to be like hardcore hair metal and all of their backup dancers are like, they gave me $3 to be here. Like just not excited about anything. It's fucking great. Oh,
well, I like how they're trying to be hardcore, but they like play fall, but really fall down the hill in the snow. It's like, wait, was that on purpose?
I was like, was that a happy accident? Or were they just like, keep rolling?
Yeah. Well, apparently, now this is from IMDb, so take this with a grain of salt, but this is trivia. But it says that the band members of Easy Action, who played the band in the film, had never acted before. And to overcome their stage fright, the director fed them copious amounts of beer. So the band and several crew members were pretty drunk while making the film, which makes sense.
I believe it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So what I think is really fun is that I think Easy Action, what I found, I don't know if it's still on there. I just remember them really pimping this out on their YouTube page for having, like, they just took the VHS rip and they put it on there and like, hey, check us out in this 80s horror film we did, blah, 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 blah. And it was just like, all the comments were people that were really obsessed with, like, Easy Action just saying how good of a movie this is. And I almost wanted to troll them because it was like, you know, you always have those fanboys that no matter what the people do, you love.
Yeah.
Vinner syndrome for me, it doesn't matter.
Yep, I'm the same way.
But, like, I was like, they're doing, like, the song, but the guy's, like, I remember he's, like, has the guitar in his hand and he has his fingers on the frets, And then he just drops the hand. He's not even holding the fret anymore, but he's still, like, just stringing the guitar. And then he picks up. He's like, oh, shit, here we go.
That stuff always annoys me in films. Whenever I see stuff like that, I'm like, ugh.
Well, you know what? You'd be really good at commentary with Bill from Code Red, because he likes to point out that stuff, too.
I would never point it out in a film commentary.
If we had a drinking game podcast, every single time Brad talks shit on Code Red.
Like, we have three new titles up on the Screen Archives, by the way. Three new titles from Code Red, three Screen Archives, if you want. All right. Anyway, yeah, I thought this movie was all right. It's a fun premise, but
it's
cheesy. It's cheesy.
It's
as heck.
Cheesy good. I really wish that I would have been drunk when I watched it.
Yeah, it's one of those
films.
It's
a fun
kinda,
drunk movie.
You just kind of can check out and just hang out and have fun with it. I mean, it's no, my jelly beans are all gone.
Oh my god!
What about
so
Skittles?
Cute. I can't handle it.
Skittles.
It's almost his bedtime.
Give him a ring pop.
Not gonna have any more sugar.
Give him a ring pop.
But
Gam wants to have a ring pop.
I'm just going to kidnap your child is what's going to happen. I'm just going to kidnap him.
But yeah, I it's one of those films, like, find it on YouTube and give it a watch, and it's never going to get, like, a proper, you know, DVD release.
Probably not.
You say that, my friend.
If it ever came out on Blu-ray, I would definitely buy the heck out of it, for sure. I mean, it's a fun...
Would you really buy the heck out of it?
Yeah, yes.
Like, how many times do you have to buy it to buy the heck out of it? Just once?
I would buy it immediately. I wouldn't think twice. I'd be like, boom, purchase. But unless it was like Code Red and it was freaking $29.95 for a Blu-ray. No.
Drink.
He's going to buy the heck out of something after he prays the plaque away. So.
Right. All right. So
pray the, that's a tongue twister for me.
Pray the plaque,
pray the plaque away.
All right, so that's Blood Tracks, people. Do we have anything else to say about Blood Tracks?
Wait. How can we skim that quickly over Blood Tracks?
I don't know. Are we going to rehash the whole plot for everybody?
It's The Hills Have Eyes in the Snow plus hair metal plus cheeseball plus Swedish dubbing.
Yeah,
boom.
It's on YouTube. God. Check it out, you know? Yeah. Let us know what you think.
Oh, well, you know what? Fine. If that's all you want to spend on Blood Tracks, that's fine.
I mean, it's not Trick or Treat. I mean, that movie, you know.
Fuck, I love
Trick or Treat. I can spend a lot more time talking about that film.
That and Hard Rock Zombies. Can we just have like a heavy metal horror?
We need to put together a heavy
Blood Tracks.
We need to put together a heavy metal horror show.
It's getting cold,
you guys. Possibility?
If we do that, we have to get Mike McPadden,
okay,
the guy who wrote heavy metal movies, over 666 heavy metal movies. It's such a great
book.
It's incredible.
That's going to go on the schedule. We will do that. We will do a heavy metal horror themed podcast. It'll rock.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll pull out the goods.
We gotta shut this down. I gotta get going,
dude. No, seriously. Let's talk about heavy metal horror for a second. There is a fucking heavy metal horror film called Hard Rock Nightmare.
Yes.
That is fucking ridiculous.
Not Heavy Metal Nightmare.
No. It's called Hard Rock Nightmare. It is this kid who accidentally believes his grandfather is a vampire and he kills him. So he has all these mental problems when he grows up. And then it gets really weird. Because he keeps teasing his grandson. He's like, I'm a vampire, blah! So the kid gets really scared and fucking kills him because he thinks his grandfather's telling the truth.
I don't know why that's so funny to me. It's not funny at all, but it's really funny.
When the movie unfolds, it gets really fucking crazy. But, yeah, let's do a heavy metal horror for October.
Yeah.
Let's put it in the books. Some Black Roses and shit. I'm still playing Blood Tracks in the background.
All right, you guys.
Wait, you want to say thank you for our sponsors? You visit us on Twitters and Facebook.
Go
leave
to
us some comments.
Thescreamcast.com. Go to the sponsors page. Give them some love. Coffee Shop of Horrors and Grindhouse Video and buy Wolfmen of Mars music. All right, check them out.
We're at
thescreamcast.com.
The Screamcast.
You can find all our contact information over there. And a huge shout out to oneofus.net for broadcasting the show. Check out their other podcasts. They have a great lineup. And also thank you to nerdly.co.uk. That's all I got. All right? Good enough? Is that quick enough for you, Brad?
It was beautiful. I love it.
And don't forget that Voodoo, you can do some crazy shit and save a lot of money. Sean just saved me probably like $500.
Nice.
So I'm going to buy you a pair of socks.
Awesome. Make sure they're really good running socks.
Nope, I'm getting you tube socks so you can jerk off.
Oh, okay. Great, fantastic. I'll
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. All right.
I'll buy you running socks.
All of you guys,
I'm a real friend.
All of you guys have a fantastic week. Talk to you next time. We're going to release a bonus episode.
Oh, that's right.
On Thursday, Vinegar Syndrome is dropping their TV or station.
Exploitation
TV.
Do you want me to say that?
So stay tuned for Thursday. We'll have a special episode dropping then.
That
first
means
time ever.
This Thursday.
Like you're listening to it on Tuesday?
It's 2 days after this.
Yes. So that'll be fun. I'm excited for that. All right. We'll talk to all of you guys Thursday and then next week. Bye bye.
Woo! The horror you feel, you can't let it go. It's already there, you're all much too slow. Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.